Welcome, everyone, to our Thursday night Stargate Roundtable. We're sorry to be a few minutes late here, but there seems to be some technical difficulties, and I don't think we even have Kathy on yet, so hopefully we'll get all of it solved shortly. We will open the night, as we usually do, with Angel Sue helping us to set the tone and have a nice little meditation before we start the discussion. So, Angel Sue, pass the talking stick to you.
Thank you, Marita Robert. And, oh, boy, a week after Thanksgiving Day, I'm just still feeling so thankful that we have this opportunity together. So we're going to welcome you in the light of the Most Radiant One and in the office of the Christ. And only in the office of the Christ. And we're invoking the loving energies of Saint Germain and the Violet Flame here now. So please declare yourself to be who you really are, the beloved daughter, the adored son of God, Goddess, all there is, the God of your heart. And welcome in your support team, your higher self, your beloved twin flame, your guides, your masters, your teachers, your angels, your councils of light, all those from the lighted realms that celebrate you for showing up and living here in this time. So with every breath that you take, intend that more unconditional divine love floods into you, and every exhalation shares the gratitude with every cell of this planet, within, upon, and around. And so, since we're going to just kind of hurry things up, I ask you to think about the issues in your life. Think about the yearning within your heart, your mind, your emotions, your spirit, to live your life with miracles abounding, with the divine showing up at every turn. Think about the people that you claim in your life. Think about your family, your friends, your associates. Think about the people you know of, whether through the media or the internet or through whatever means. Think about Nasara, the Reformation Act, and what changes. What freedom, what sovereignty it can bring for you. Think about our Faction 3 White Knights, our galactic forces of light, the media people, all those that are bringing this forward, the whistleblowers, bringing peace within every being. And then we're going to call in all those beings that are known and unknown, seen and unseen. And you're stepping up by doing the law of one here now for yourself and for all within this planet, this time and space, past, present, future, all potentials, all parallels, everything. To find their divinity, their peace, their joy, their happiness. And so with this, we're going to say we are all one. And we're joining together. When one is harmed, then all are harmed. As one is helped, then all are helped. And therefore, in the name of who we are, and we are one with all there is, we ask that only the highest good of all concerned happen here, and that it be lifted up and perfected even beyond our understanding or our ability to visualize, but the perfect, happy, divine solution. And with this, we give thanks that this is done with Rainbird's 13 thank yous and honey in the heart. And with the closing now, we say all men, all women, all children, all beings, all creation, we are all one. And we are truly divine in this time and space and beyond forevermore. So be it. I pass the talking stick.
Well, thank you, Angel Sue. We hope that you're doing well, and we will enjoy having you on the call every week, as you always get us started well. Carolyn, we would like to pass the talking stick to you now and allow you to help us understand what's going on in the Mayan calendar energies.
Sure. Thank you, Marita Robert. I'll take that talking stick. And today is a 10 con, and that's that 10 manifestation, and con the seed energy. So we're in the wave of men right now, and that's seeing that big picture. So we have that opportunity to see that big picture, and we're manifesting that with that good con seed energy right now. It's the healing aspect. It's about that openness to life and self-determination. It's and harmony seeking. And it's about timing, and it's about being productive, producing. So it's a good day in manifesting. Let's manifest the Sarah now. Let's bring that one in. So we have this great Nisera wave to work with, the men energy, the eagle energy. And I always think of that as defining Nisera in itself. So let's do that with this, with what we bring in tonight in our prayers and manifestations. So, and then tomorrow, Friday, is 11 Cheek Chong, that serpent energy, that body-changing energy. So let's let go of what no longer serves us with that good tone of 11, where we get to dissolve all of that and let go and let death, so that we can let birth and rebirth and renew. So that's tomorrow's energy. And then on Saturday, we have a 12 teeny. And that's that good linker of worlds, teeny energy in 12, with that good tone of crystal clarity, the crystal tone. So there you go. Work with that crystal tone and the linking of the worlds on Saturday. And whatever worlds, bring heaven to earth, link that one on Saturday. And then on Sunday, a 13 Monique, we end this wave with that 13 transformation energy. Transmutation energy as well. So, yeah, moving on to the next wave with that 13 transcending energy. And a Monique, a healing hand, or the deer. All that good Monique energy. So that's on Sunday, and then on Monday we have a one Lamont. We begin the last wave of this 260-day cycle. So when we start this, I think around spring, the equinox, and we will be ending it with this wave that starts next Monday. 13 days from that would be on the 20th or 21st, 20th, I believe, of December. So right there at the solstice. we'll be ending the wave. And so Lamont is the last wave to end this, ending the whole cycle of the Zolkin, 260 days. So it's like birth. So that's good. That's just, we're celebrating birth energy with Christmas, so it comes right into in with that. So very synchronistic with the energy of the holiday, for sure. And so this is the last wave of the, bringing the birth cycle of this 260 days or whatever we started on this path of last March. Here we are completing with this last wave starting on Monday with Lamont energy. And that's, let me read to you this a little bit about Lamont. So it's a fun start. It's the Stargate. So it is pronounced Lamont. In its common Mayan usage, means rabbit. And so its qualities are harmony, starseed, beneficial combinations, way-shower, it's the octave, expanded love, clear perspective. So it's the eighth. It's the eighth glyph, so it has that eight energy, the number eight, harmonic resonance with it. And the symbols are the star path and cascading fireworks. So the colors, twilight blue and gold. Its herbs are comfrey and blazing star. I don't know what that one is. Flowers, Japanese or Dutch iris. And allium, which is like onion. Scent is jasmine. And its stones are lapis, star seed crystals, and star sapphire. The element fire, the direction south. It's shadow wisdom, self-doubt, feeling disconnected from the expanded presence of your essence self, learning the lessons of disharmony. And it's shadow transformation, draw on love to prune away the disharmony in your life, cultivate harmony, access your star-seeded essence, and stand in the harmony of your full presence. And the harmonic wisdom, wavelength, fundamental, beneficial combination. So it's that harmonic, yeah, for sure, for this energy that carries us. And the mudra was really interesting, so I want to share it with you. They say it's the same position as Monique, where you have your hands forming an O at the level of the ears with the forearms perpendicular, and then moving the arms up and out, releasing the O with a burst of the fingers. So if you followed that, you might want to try it. And the meditation, I am ignition, cosmic milkweed, explosion of resonant sparks on the tapestry of God. And I like that, so I'm going to say it again. I am ignition, cosmic milkweed, explosion of resonant sparks on the tapestry of God. And if you know what a milkweed is, it's this little plant that the monarch butterflies like, so people let it grow. It has a nice flower with a really nice scent, but it has these seeds on it that have these little fluffy tails on them, and they just fly away in the wind and land wherever they land. But it's a milkweed explosion when that happens, and you can play with them that way. Okay, and the affirmation, I am my full presence now. I am the harmony of the stars. And so that's the energy we'll carry for the last wave. We start on Monday, and then on Tuesday, let's see where we are. Okay, Tuesday, Maluk, and then Wednesday, Tuesday. Maluk is the moon, it's telepathy, working with moon energy, and with the two as well, so it's a really strong moon energy, a lunar aspect tone as well. It's like a double moon energy on Tuesday, and then Wednesday we have the three oak, and that's the unconditional love of the dog in the three activation tone, and then on Thursday when we come back, it's a four chewing. And I also think that's the new moon. So we're working with new moon energy as well. So there you go. That's about it for the Mayan calendar. And I'd like to pass the talking stick right back to you, Marita. Here it comes.
Well, thank you, Carolyn. I'm glad you took time to explain that to people that don't live in the country or haven't seen the milkweed, how that, and it's a little silky stuff that's inside. During World War II, they actually had people pick that to use in parachutes some way. I don't know how it was processed, but I remember being asked to do that. So I don't know if that's anything in part of your memory or not, but at least that's, I'm glad you took time to explain a little bit about what it looks like. So the other thing that I need to say, I have goofed in someone, we had talked about, you know, that a healthy plant, the bugs don't bother it or it doesn't get disease. And someone in Florida asked me to send them the product that I use, and there's a gallon of each one, one for mainly for the plant, and one and mainly and the other one mainly for the soil. And usually we use them together. And I was supposed to ship these, and I don't. I've lost the address. So if you're on the line again tonight, please give me a call. 317-773-0061 or email me at stargatemarita@gmail.com. And sorry, everybody, for this interruption, but I really don't like to disappoint somebody when they're expecting a package and I didn't get it done. So I don't know where the address is. If there's anybody else that needs to make any announcements here, we'll do that. I'm going to pass the talking stick to Taryn Rama to tell us who they've talked to today. And then I will tell you that the next hour, Robert and I were just privileged to be at so many places at the right time. And when Dr. Stephen Greer, we're going to do a tape presentation that he made, at the very first time when he opened up and tried to invite people to come in and be part of his organization to support it and to help spread the information. We were at a global sciences conference in Colorado, and that was when he first began doing the including of the many, many people to help him on his team. So I always have a special place in my heart for Dr. Stephen Greer, and he has a lot of good information for us as well. So, Taryn Rama, tell us a little bit about who you talked to out there today.
Greetings. Hello, everybody. We always got to get this up. Oh, dear. Can you go get that, Rama? We got to pull out the cord more, a lot more.
Sounds like you knocked something off.
And just about everything, because the cord was too short.
Okay.
Oh, you're going to have it like that? Okay, lift the cord all the way on the other side then. Yeah, that's good. All the way. There we go. Okay, greetings, everybody. Oh, there's a lot going on, I must say.
There is.
And I've had a couple of emails about asking if you would talk about the California thing, who did that and who's behind it, or a little more about it. So just you can do that whenever you get to it, but I'll just mention it now that I had a couple emails that people had asked for that, though.
Okay, and I just want to say, Uncle Doug, I think that what happened is that Kathy got bumped earlier on the call, but I think if you try her again, she might be able to get on here. In case we could have her on here, that would be great. When it's no, she's not.
I am. She broke. Yes, I've been with you since 9 o'clock since we got on.
Right.
So I don't know
she
why.
She types that she's up here. We just don't see your picture.
Right.
Oh, we don't see your picture. Is all that there is. But
yep.
She, oh, that's what you meant by you didn't get a black eye because you're on there. I didn't comprehend. Okay, well, I think you all can guess by now what the answer is going to be. home. It's always a black op. Always, because these guys are in so much hot water and they are absolutely trying to dump on Obama till the cows come home and make up all kinds of lies. As I was telling Pamela and Rama today, that Chris Christie got up there today and he said, in case you don't know, people, we're in World War III. That's a real statement. I saw it on Al Jazeera. Didn't make it up in my brain. So when we ask questions right now about who done it, that's who done it. They all are absolutely terrified.
Right? Yeah. You want to know who the terrorists are? John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Chris Christie, all the folks that are running this absolutely failed Republican Party.
As the King of Egypt said last Sunday.
Yeah.
For those who haven't caught on to that. He called Rama up, and it was the first time in over a year. And in other words, he doesn't call unless there's something for him to say.
Yeah.
And what he said is that the King of Egypt has been kept in the loop with the good members of the French secret police and the Interpol, the International Law Enforcement Agency, and they have been handing over to him piles and piles and piles of files on Netanyahu, John McCain, Hillary Clinton, Mitch McTurtle, John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Paul Ryan, the Eddie Munster of the show, and Ayn Rand, even though she's not here anymore, the CEO of the Rand Corporation's in her place. And Rand Corporation, located in Indiana, about 30 miles northeast of Indianapolis, underground, like tens of miles, maybe more, I don't know.
It's one of those underground.
It's a 80 or 90 mile square diameter all the way around, radius all the way around of underground explosives and chemical weapons, sarin gas, mustard gas, these kinds of things. And again, you don't want to have anything go boom around there anywhere close. But anyway, that's the corporation that we're talking about. And he included that particular corporation in this piles and piles and piles of files of really outrageous stuff on these characters. And a very, 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 very famous actress called Rama up the very next day, which we're refraining from giving her name. Yet she confirmed everything the King of Egypt said, and Rama hasn't talked to her for a couple years.
It's been at least...
Three years.
3 or 4.
Yeah, so just to go back to the King of Egypt, on the North Wall, and she said especially Hillary. Hillary is in so much hot water, it's outrageous. That's how she put it. Anyway, on the North Wall, back to the King of Egypt, on the North Wall of the King Tut's tomb... there's another room, and it's comprehended that King Tut's mummy was in that room before it was in this room that we are all looking at, you know, today. And before King Tut was in that room, Nefertiti's mummy was in that smaller room off the north wall of the present Tut's tomb, and that the King of Egypt said they will be discovering findings upon findings in that room that will prove beyond the question of a doubt the presence of our ET galactic brothers and sisters. And Rama couldn't keep his mouth quiet, and he said, what did you say again, Rama?
By Christmas?
Yeah, by Christmas. And Then the king of Egypt answered and said, you said that. I said, this is happening in this now, N-O-W moment. Take it or leave it, Lord Rama. And then the king of Egypt said, by the next full moon in December, and Rama was thinking that was around the second week in December, and I said, we just had a full moon.
Right.
And so that was last Monday, and so I looked it up, and in case you didn't look it up, the next full moon is on Christmas Day. So this is what he said about Christmas Day. He said, December 25th, well, he didn't say that, but Christmas Day is the 25th, we may see something connected with the galactics, connected with full disclosure, and the ultimate full total downfall of the 13 families. And you can imagine after Rama told me that, and then I looked up what day that was, I just went, ay, ay, ay. So that was an interesting update last Sunday. And then our friend, we told you about that, can't give her name, on that was on Sunday, and then she called on Monday. And she also told Rama a little story about her experiences with the ET. You want to tell that story, Rama?
They landed, the Syrians and the Pleiadians came and landed on her land, and this very tall Pleiadian, I believe it was a man, came up and touched her on the third eye. And she just fell backwards, and she didn't get hurt or anything, but they took her to Pleiades for 72 hours, three Earth days. And when she came back, let's say all her siddhas were turned on.
Yes, and she also said that for all practical purposes, the entire police force in our country are the present-day Stasi in the world.
Gestapo.
And in other words, okay, slow down on the energy.
Yeah.
Send them more love. It is totally rigged. And that a good policeman is a rare thing, not a norm. It's not the other way around. And they're all, you know, kind of run by the 13 families through the United Nations. They do not answer to any of the states or the municipalities. And that's been for a very, 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 very long time.
Yeah.
And that's why this is happening like this. And so the other thing is that this goes to the Chicago killing of they erased 89 minutes of videotape on all three video cameras at the Burger King. And the only thing they didn't get was there was an indoor camera. And these eight cops, not just the one cop, but there were seven other cops there,
the Burger King.
Yeah, no, the young man that was killed.
Oh.
I keep forgetting. Laquan.
Yeah.
Laquan McDonald's murder. They were all in the Burger King back room, and they had a camera on there, and they didn't see it. And that what they were doing is what they filmed was these guys going into their computer system and erasing all the video camera footage.
Oh,
so they got the goods on all eight of them for that.
And Robin.
And then they erased all of that. And then there is a video cam, a dash cam information that – on there, they had that footage that everybody finally got to see of the actual way that Laquan was killed, where in the statement that all eight of those guys made. It's just the opposite. They said he was lunging with this 2-inch knife in his hand at the policeman, and so that they were justifying that, that he could be killed like that. Not to say the facts that he emptied 16 rounds in the young man, and the young man was moving away from them, many, many yards away from them. So this is so damning. Now they want to have a independent federal investigation, Loretta Lynch, go in there and investigate the entire police department and their justice system in there. And they're calling for the Black Lives Matter people are calling for the resignation of Rahm Emanuel. And of course, Rahm Emanuel. Yes, he refused to step down. They think that's bad about what he did. What he is he's the head of the Mossad in this country, which is totally against the law. That's treason. There's not supposed to be any Mossad running around heading up anything,
right,
in this country. Which is a very telling story, because and besides the fact that Chicago is the center in this country, like the base in this country for the Queen of England, that's what Chicago is, and it's got the most killings of any place in the country, of any city or any place in the country, every single year. And by the way, it's 89 or 90 people a day are killed in this country. And Harry Reid got up there and talked about this and basically was saying, along with another Democrat who made it very specific, he said, anyone in the Congress, everyone in Congress is complicit with every murder that takes place in this country. Every single day, as they have not made some regulations to stop this kind of stuff from happening, they have not. And I'm just saying, these kinds of things that are coming down right now are so big. It's eye-opening. Okay, Rama wants to say a few things. Go ahead, honey.
Yeah. Today, just for a moment, I got to talk with Ed Snowden, Ray McGovern, and Larry and Curly about the present situations. And they all said this is not anything connected with that fake Middle Eastern group with the IS word in it. And Ed Snowden said there are so many galactics over the Middle East right now, and Mr. Erdogan has a price on his head. And you could say Mr. Putin may have put the price on Mr. Erdogan's head.
Well, what Putin also said generally today is that Turkey is going to be very sorry for what they have done.
Yeah.
And he mentioned that there were two that were killed. One of them was the pilot of the plane.
Right.
The other one was killed in the helicopter, one of two helicopters that went down. And the way that first helicopter went down was by the United States Black Ops-backed moderate Syrian rebel group. And they did it with United States weapons. Ground-to-air missile weapon, and so that's. And remember, Mr. Putin is working with Barack Obama and with President Xi behind the scenes. I mean, very behind the scenes, and yet they have to put on another face on the front. And he gave a State of the Union address last night. I missed that. I mean, usually RT covers about 4 hours.
Yeah, somehow they didn't show that.
I mean, no 30-minute, 40-minute State of the Union addresses for Putin.
No.
And he made that statement at that address. And he didn't start, this is the first time, he started his State of the Union address with a complete minute of total silence for the loss of the two Russian
pilots.
Well, a pilot and, two pilots. One is the helicopter, which was on a mission to aid, come to the aid of the downed pilot. And it is absolutely against all rules of war to take down somebody that's coming to help help someone. That's on the United States Black Ops record, which makes it look like it's on Obama's record. Nothing is on Obama's record. Everything is on the 13 families record, with the leader of the band being Hillary Clinton.
And the Rothschilds, along with the Rockies and the other 13 families, let's say there's nowhere they can go except to make peace with their God, as they have been told.
Let me ask a question here for one of our new listeners. This is somebody that has just recently found us, and you talked about the Mossad in Chicago, and they want to know, what is Mossad?
Okay. The Mossad is Israel's CIA, for all practical purposes. Israel completely controls this whole country and has since 1949. Right. In other words, everything that's going on in our Congress is only going on because the Mossad and Israel's leadership says, do this or you're dead.
Right.
That's what's going on. And that's a very important issue, because the World War II never, ever, ever ended. And that's a fact. Because you need to make a treaty for a war to end. And there was no treaty. There was only a United States, a pan-German alliance, the West collaborating with Germany in an alliance that is not a treaty. And it's a cover-up to do that. That is why there has been never, ever since then a war declared. In other words, we went and invaded and occupied every country on earth. And we've got a standing army, which is against the Constitution, and we've had it since then. And we have 1,000 or more military bases, meaning a standing army in 1,000 places on the planet.
And right now in Turkey, I mean, not in Turkey, excuse me, in Syria, right now we have 2,000 boots on the ground, and quote unquote, these are folks to help the Syrians. Yet Norman Goldman today on his show made
I thought the 2,000 was combined in Iraq and Syria. They only added
that could
two,
be.
They only added 200 to Syria just lately, but combined between Syria and Iraq, there's 2,000.
But Norman Goldman talked about this today. He is a lawyer that used to work with Eric Schneiderman, and he went to L.A., and he's a friend of Al Franken. He's a very good comedian, and he talked about this today, and he just said that there are so many irons in the fire right now of these 13 families absolutely cooking themselves. And it's quite blatant to see. And behind the scenes, what I'm hearing is there are arrests going on that Loretta Lynch, 16 people from FIFA, the soccer story, were arrested today. And Dominique Strauss-Kahn was brought up by Edward Snowden, Ray McGovern, and Larry and Curly today. And behind the scenes right now, Dominique Strauss-Kahn is in the limelight in Europe, and it's not being discussed over here. There's a price on his head for what he did to the maid in New York City. Let's say all these white folks that have to do with the 13 families, they are going to have to deal with the fact that the Khazarian Empire is over. And, you know, it's a new Yuga. It's called Sat Yuga. And Shiva, Durga, Kali, Pele, Mother Sekhmet, you know, it's all being orchestrated by these higher energies. I keep being told by more and more of these folks that I talk to, Nibiru is doing the magic that it's doing around the sun. It's transfiguring the sun. This also is in conjunction with the energies that go all the way to the center of the Milky Way galaxy. This lines up with what's happening as Mahala speaks about this. As the energies increase in magnitude and octave and frequency by the 10th of December into 12/12, a stargate opens and the energies go even higher. And as also Uranus, all the planets are going into forward motion. This also is adding to aid and abet the light that, you know, this dark energy of Mark Levine said it today, at least every hour, three people are shot in this country. And
every hour what?
Mark Levine, the talk show host in the afternoon, he said every hour, at least three people in the United States are shot.
Well, that would be 25, 50, 75. They're saying it's 89 or 90 people a day.
Yeah.
So that's up to about 72 or something, but they're saying 89 to 9 people a day are killed in this country.
Yeah.
And most of them
are black.
Yeah. And I don't know how many of those, but I would say more than half of them are by the police.
That's right.
Which is terrifying. And then, there's some interesting quotations here.
Mm-hmm.
You just say that this is Benjamin Fulford, the Illuminati through their grand. Before I say that, Erdogan has been siphoning off illegal oil from an underground pipe that comes from ISIL's turf in Syria. And when that plane was taken down, that had nothing to do with them being in the territory of Syria. Had everything to do with them being over their pipeline. And they wanted to take that plane down before it took out the pipeline by, you know, them bombing something on the ground. And Russia's Putin's military were over there to do just that because they were given technology from the Andromedans to do just that, and they have it. Now, you know, when you hear Putin in the State of the Union, after he calls for 1 minute of silent meditation and prayer because of the loss of all the Russian people on that Russian plane that was shot out of the sky by Netanyahu from a ground-to-air missile, and then the two pilots, one by Turkey and the other one by the United States Black Ops. And just keep remembering that Putin and Obama and President Xi are working together. This is a real journey.
And Don Blankenship has been convicted of the violating the mining laws. So those 20 people that died at the Massey coal mine, let's just say there's closure, yet he hasn't gone to jail yet. He's been convicted. That's a big deal.
And Tom Hartman said that chances are he won't see one day in jail. Not one day. They're going to weasel their way out of it. But that reminds me that
murder.
Mr. Pistorius got an upgrade in his conviction for first-degree murder.
Yeah.
And therefore, the minimum of his girlfriend. And so the minimum that he has to spend time in there in jail is 15 years for that. That's the rules over in South Africa. So that's, I'm sure, quite devastating for that gentleman because he was already out on house arrest. He could go about his business with that funny little ankle bracelet on him. I've got to say that's the people, and not just the family, but a whole lot of people, and hard work to get convicted. But I could see it in, it's a woman judge, and I could see she was very thorough about the first time around, but it was already at that time when she made the decision then, there was a lawsuit and another all kinds of stuff going on. So this is what happened. And Puerto Rico is broke. They are completely cashless. And it's up to Congress what happens to these people. And the chances with this Congress we've got of anything getting done is, minus zero. So if whatever applies here about murdering people in this country, that the Congress is accountable for that, and equally as if they are murdering the people, that has to do with what's going to be coming down here with their decisions about Puerto Rico, too. It's that bad right now. And the reason is the backstory is that everything that's been taxed down there, it goes directly to the United States, and the Congress decides what to do with that money, and that people have been being robbed tens of billions of dollars, that they have been just completely stolen. And that's our nice little Republican Nazis problem, too. And just to say something sort of positive, there's a gentleman named Dr. Jonathan Metzl of the Center for Medicine, Health, and Society from Vanderbilt University. And he says that he wrote a book called The Psychiatry After Ferguson. And what he had to say is that healing cannot just be in individual ways. It has to be structural. And it has to be global at this point in time. So that's a powerful statement. It's just, there's more than that said about that. There's so much more, but I want to do just another little positive thing here. Where is it? This is monumental. This title of this article, and it's from the spiritscience.net website, http://www. It's like a Ning site like ours is, a social site. Anyway, rare astrology, all planets are moving direct from December 25th all the way through January 6th. Your birthday, happy birthday to Marita Roberts. And I just want to say that's the 12 days of Christmas we're talking about here. So let me just read this. Beginning December 25th on the full moon, along with Uranus stationing direct on that day, all major planets in our solar system will be moving direct and forward. This is thousands and thousands and thousands of years that this has not happened. I just want you to know this is a big BFD, as they always say. Stephanie Forrest, who is the first known astrologer to officially recognize this astrological phenomena, has created a hub for all astrologers to officially recognize this. Here, Rama, if that's a break, you got to take this off. Yeah. Make sure it goes off around that TV set because it might not work. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. who is the first known astrologer to officially recognize this astrological phenomena, has created a hub for all astrologers and followers of astrology to communicate on their perspectives on the upcoming All Planets in Direct Motion Cycle, or APDM. Stephanie states, quote, "Now here is this moment. From our geocentric view, our entire solar system moving together in the same direction, like a flowing cosmic river, all traveling toward this one direction. From the position of the sun or Earth's perspective, all planets in direct motion, APDM, represents an organic, holistic, synchronous, harmonious group passage through the end to the endless universe," where it means we're in multiversal time space continuum, endless. Stephanie goes on to write, "An APDM cycle is definitively one of hope for the future. It's uniquely a time where the Earth's perspective becomes the sun, where the vibration of the solar system can provide an extraordinary kind of cosmic assistance to any endeavor created to benefit rather than to hinder human life on Earth." Turn the page just a minute, second. Oh, it's 8 o'clock. Where the planet can be energized by cosmic fuel rather than fossil fuels, with our solar system moving about 600,000 miles per hour. With this kind of speed and power, maybe it takes just one molecule of APDM sunlight to transfer a new kind of sustainable solar system energy on the Earth without harm to natural life on Earth. Velocity, acceleration, and movement are all intrinsically related to all planets in direct motion, APDM. Uranus will begin this cycle December 25th on the full moon. Uranus going direct with all the rest moving forward, and will end January 6, 2016, with Mercury stationing retrograde on that day. Holy Hannah. With these two planets starting and ending this cycle, Stephanie suggests there is a possibility of a new technological discovery taking place that helps for healing and for communication. This could also bring a sudden, shocking communication leak that leads to massive positive changes on our Earth. Above all, during this time, Stephanie suggests engaging in acts and thoughts of love, unity, consciousness, and abundance. Let's do abundance. Manifestations can be quickened during this time. Coming together in groups to do such synchronized global meditations are a great way to participate. I encourage readers to share this now and several times in the coming days leading up to this rare cycle that begins on December 25th, 2015. That way, we can reach as many people as possible to consciously co-create a beautiful new world during this 11-day cycle. I see we're 2 minutes past the hour, but we'll talk a little more just a little later. Queen Sekhmet, there's an article here, just going to read a little bit, just so you get it. And then we'll go all the way to the end. There's no guest today, everybody. We're going to have Dr. Greer as the guest. So
Dr.
Queen
Greer is our guest for the day. I had told them that at the beginning, and it is a recorded presentation that Tara and Rama are going to play for us. So just so you know, whenever you're ready to start that, you just go ahead and do it. And I'll just stay out of it and let you handle it. Okay?
Yes, thank you, Marita Robert. And just to let everybody know, this thing is almost 4 hours long. So and then we've got about half an hour left of the Dr. Rogan interview with Joe Rogan interview with Dr. Greer. So we're going to finish with that, and then the next hour and a half we can just keep on going and get as much of it in as possible. It's very important stuff. And Queen Sekhmet, Dread Lioness of Africa. Queen Sekhmet, Dread Lioness of Khem or Egypt, she who must be obeyed, the all-conquering queen of Ethiopia. In the Cushitic Kemetic cosmology, Sekhmet, also spelled S-E-C-H-M-E-T, S-E-K-H-M-E-T, S-E-S-A-K-H-H-E-T, and S-A-K-H-M-E-T, Greek names, Sakmis, was the primordial goddess. Her name suited her function and means the conquering lady or one who is powerful, and she was also given titles such as the one before whom trembles and the lady of slaughter. Sekhmet was also known as the Scarlet Lady, a reference to blood, and the avenger of wrongs, as the one who destroyed the evil relentlessly whilst protecting goodness. She was hailed as Nyabingi in the upper sections of the Nile near the borders of southern Sudan and Uganda, ancient Ethiopia, Kush, and the land of the first pharaohs. Okay, I'm not going to go any farther. I'm just going to say that there's also a period of time where West Ethiopia was all of Africa, and East Ethiopia was all of India. And so it is. This is an excellent article. We'll do it further another time. I just want you to get a gist of that. And Rama, you'll put that up on the web, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's start with the last half hour of our brother, Dr. Greer, in an interview with Joe Rogan. Okay.
That's not, this is clear skies, no weather, coming up from the ground.
But don't they, but doesn't ball lightning have something to do with, there's certain types of visual phenomena that have to do with tectonic plates and pressure and stress?
Piezoelectric.
Yeah, what is that?
No, well, that's very different also. That'll be just sort of a discharge, like an electrical discharge.
You just see it.
And that's from the rocks, and usually it's when there's quartz. The pressure of it and the electromagnetic energy will build up and it'll burst out. But, you know, this is an object, and you can see it quite clearly, and it's right at the edge of the speed of light because it's kind of coming in and out of this dimension. It's a really great video. And there were like 30, 40 people who saw this happen. So we do this. I've been doing this for 22 years. And
what are you showing up there, Brian? What is that?
It was one of these objects that came over. I think that was at Mount Shasta. I'm not sure. It's my laser, and it's this object that came right over. And, you know, we also train people to always go out with satellite charts, so you know when the satellites
are coming. This is your footage?
Mm-hmm.
Of this thing flying in the sky?
Yep.
Whoa.
And
that's your laser?
That's my, I have a big, you know, it's a, one of these.
I got one of those.
Yeah, it'll go, you know what I'm talking about? It'll go 100, 200 miles into space.
Now, when you were filming this, are you trying to contact them? Like, what are you trying to do?
We had. So we do the protocols where you do the remote viewing, the vector to show them where you are. We play these electronic tones in the space and then have electronic field detectors out there. So we'll have magnetic field detectors, various laser detectors, other electromagnetic spectrum, and those will begin to go off, and then we'll have an object fly over, like this object here that was right near us. It comes right outside. So what people have to understand is that if you have an object that is coming in and out of dimensions, it's not going to necessarily look like a 747 or even a flying saucer. It's going to be in various energy forms. And this is the weird sort of effect. Most people don't understand that 99% of the time, an interstellar civilization doesn't have to be in linear space-time if they have that kind of physics. So what happens when you go beyond the speed of light? All right, you're going to not have anything visible, but if you begin to have an energy discharge into an area of space, and it's very close to this dimension, it'll start to give off an energy field, our corona. And so one of the witnesses we have was at a nuclear hot base out in Oklahoma back years ago. I think it was in the 70s. And there was this object that was in the shape of a UFO, but it wasn't solid. And it flew over the what they call the hot, you know, where the jets were hot loaded with nuclear weapons. And the alarms went off. But he says this thing was not solid like this is, like your rock salt. It was, you could have walked right through it, but it was in the shape of a craft. But it was shifted so that the matter was all energy. And, of course, matter is energy. So the physics behind this gets into some really arcane stuff, probably beyond the scope of the show. But it's what this is part of what we're teaching people when we take them out, is how do these objects appear? What might you see? And I was talking to an actor here in town who had one of these happen. And it was very palpable, very real. But it wasn't.
Can you tell us who the actor was? We could tell you that they're full
of shit. No, but he, you know, there are a lot of people who've had these sort of experiences. They don't want to talk about it,
right?
Because they're afraid of, you know, being ridiculed,
right?
And but you know, when it was described to me, I said, "Oh yeah, that's classic." They really? I said, "Yeah," because if it's not a Lockheed Martin, you know, anti-gravity, and it really is ET, the weirder it is, the more likely it is to be ET. And this gets into the whole question, what are you looking for? So we train people to know kind of what to look for versus, you know, if experimental aircraft, normal aircraft, you know, space objects and junk, satellites, and then the stuff that's the weird end of it.
So the weird end of it.
Yeah, the really cool stuff.
You take these people, you bring them out to the high desert, you tune them into whatever frequency through whatever method of meditation or what have you, and these ships, are they just waiting for someone to like email them, send them a signal?
You know what I think? I think that they've actually been waiting a long time for people to do something besides just passively look at them.
Do they have to? But what I'm saying is, do they have to like load up the ship? Hey, we got some fucking people in the desert. Everybody, get on board. Let's go. How are you getting them to manifest?
I'm not getting them to.
But how is anybody getting? How is the signal being recognized by them?
Because I'm quite convinced they have electronics that pick up on this, what we were talking about earlier, this conscious field of coherent thought. And this is, again, the most controversial end of what I'm doing. And to me, it's the most interesting also. You know, before I was a doctor, I was a meditation teacher. You know that. But
no, I didn't know that. Yeah. What type of meditation?
Mantra in mm-hmm. Vedic. So okay. I was Vedanta in Vedic meditation. You know, I learned Sanskrit and learned to teach people meditation. So that was my first sort of career. If you can call it a career, it was an avocation as much as more in a vocation. But, and it was because of the result of this near-death experience. And I began to realize that really the thing that is most intriguing about all this is that free energy is like late 1800s to mid 1900s, anti-gravity mid 40s to mid 50s, the science of consciousness and the interface between mind and matter, mind and body, mind and thought and electromagnetic systems. That's the really cool stuff. And that's, you know, to me, most people know me project and these other things, but to me that's the most exciting part of this, because that is the frontier. The final frontier is not space, it's consciousness.
So you take these people out, there's 20 of them, and you spend how many days out there?
It's usually 6 days and nights, and so we go out, but during the day it's more a teaching module and teaching them remote viewing concepts and the science of consciousness, other information they need to have. Then we, you know, go out at night, usually from around sunset to one or so in the morning, sometimes two. And we're out in the stars making observation doing the remote viewing practice. And then people go home and do it. There's now something like 1,100 or 1,200 teams all over the world doing this that have picked up on this idea. It's really a phenomenal thing. And people are having amazing sightings and experiences all over the world. There's a global CE5 initiative going on. And it's really
when
exciting.
When you keep saying CE5, you mean close encounters of the fifth kind, which is visual?
No.
What is
okay, let me explain that. I'm sorry. We back up.
Because I know the movie, the third kind.
The Steven Spielberg's movie. Yeah.
That's how I know this. Most people are probably like me. They don't
know. And the fourth kind is when someone feels they've had contact and been on board. The fifth kind is a term that I launched and the concept of in 1990, which is when humans, instead of passively having, so all those others, close encounters of the first and third and fourth kind, are passive because you're sort of either seeing it or it's a landing thing or what have you. A close encounter of the fifth kind is when a human does something interactive. So it's like, you know, it's like the internet versus something passive, or where you're actually making contact and inviting these civilizations to appear and make contact for a diplomatic purpose, or where they interact. And Dr. Haynes at NASA, Ames, put together a great book based on my initial research on this called Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, CE5, where he collected cases. We both collected cases, but he published this book some years ago about all these people who had done this. And some of them were quite incidental. For example, a craft is there and the person sees it, and instead of just gaping, they actually signal to it with, say, a light, and it signals back and comes over. The more interesting ones are the ones I discovered, which is what happened to me when I was 18, where you see a craft and you just think, move to the left, it moves to the left, move to the right, move to the right. And they're showing you that there's a link up between intent and thought and their electronics. That's the really cool stuff.
You ever read any Carl Jung?
Mm-hmm, yes.
What do you think on Carl? I mean, he wrote a whole book on the physical manifestation of UFOs through the conscious thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, the world is as you are. And it depends on the level of consciousness of the person reading what he wrote. I think that a lot of people say, well, that means that everything is being manifested by your mind. Mm-hmm. Well, but in a sense, all of reality is one conscious thought, if you want to get back into the whole all this is that concept of the Vedic. But I think these are things when you have 30 or 40 people see it, and it's interactive, you know, right. That's a close encounter of the fifth kind. So it's not your imagination doing that, particularly when you didn't get video.
I didn't even think he was necessarily saying it's your imagination.
No, but he was, you know, a lot of people don't understand what he was saying. Mm-hmm. And I think that he was really talking about some deeper aspect of what is mind.
Right. What is mind?
What is mind?
And what effect does consciousness have on physical matter?
Right. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
And in a sense, he could have almost been validating it without totally understanding the possibilities of contacting something, making something
right.
appear.
I agree.
That you seem to be convinced of, and in fact teach people to do it. I think that if you've got something like that, how is this not like on 2020 or whatever those stupid news shows are? How are you not going out there?
Well,
would you be willing to do that with a film crew?
Oh, we did with CBS. Dan Rather had a show back years ago. What was it called? We went down to Mexico, in Popo, and we did this, and a craft came up by the volcano flue, and they were filming this with professional stuff, and they ended up completely debunking it. And even though the camera guy and the reporter who was there with me said, anyone who sees this will know this is real, and CBS sanitized it. When I then said, look, you agreed in writing that any footage you get, you would share with us if we did this expedition, because we did it on our own expense, the person in charge there said, we're CBS and we're part of a corporation that has billions, and we'll fight you forever. You'll never get this footage.
Why would you need CBS, though? It seems like you'd be able to film something like that yourself in really high quality. You don't need their footage.
Well, we do. I mean, we have a certain amount. Right. I don't operate cameras, but we've had volunteers. But we've never had professional crews with us. And I mean, at some point, it'd be nice if we could do this in a professional way.
I have a crew. Right. I have a new show. It's coming out on the Sci-Fi Network.
Oh, really? What's
it's called Question Everything.
And oh, good.
One of the things we're going to do. Yeah. And one of the things we're going to do is we're going to explore things like UFOs, Bigfoot. I'm going to go to the Pacific Northwest and look for Bigfoot. But I want to
Let's go to that Atacama Desert and see if we can find
more
of these
beings. Tell me where to go. Let's go.
Yeah.
I would be more than happy to go and bring a professional crew and see if something like this can happen. What kind of success rate do you have in doing this?
Well, you know, we've never actually gone out where there hasn't been some kind of a sighting or event happen that have been seen by everyone.
Really?
Never.
So it's 100%?
Not every night, not all the time.
Right,
but something,
over a five or six day period. And are these people camping out there?
No. We don't stay. Well, I mean, I guess if someone wanted to, we usually stay in condos or houses or something in the area. We usually go to fairly, remote areas that are quiet. It's very hard to find locations where we're not going to be intruded upon. And usually when we do this, we do have people who intrude. And so we try to keep it, you know, so that the group can be coherent. Because the whole concept of this is coherent thought and coherent mind. And that's, you know, very difficult to do when you're being disrupted by a lot of folks.
Now, what if you pick 20 people to go? And how do you know that someone's not a loon? You take some crackpot out there.
Oh, well, there have been, you know. But, you know, usually the people, you know, we have an application process. And I you know, I'd say 99% of the time, they're just wonderful people. Right. And, you know, they're very sincerely interested in learning about this. And I think the science of consciousness component of the whole, what J. Allen Hynek called the high strangeness part of UFO encounters, becomes very compelling for people who've had contact and understand that when you go beyond the speed of light between star systems, you're dealing with something that's way beyond your cell phone and a Ford Explorer. And people who get that, who get out of the linear box and begin to look at that and then begin to experiment with, a lot of the people who come on these are people who have gotten the app or learned about it and they tried it. Try this at home. And they have an amazing sighting and encounter with a small group of people or a family. And then they want to come and try and do it more. So an exciting, to me, that's the next phase of all this is, you know, disclosure, bring out the energy and technologies. But then it's about the public understanding that why doesn't everyone just go out under the stars instead of sitting and looking at television and try some experiments, experiment with thought and mind and light and tone and
besides
all kinds of
floating things in space. Mm-hmm. Haven't you encountered things that are in closer proximity to the ground?
Oh, yeah, and some very odd photographs of what you might call dimensional images that look like almost like a hologram of a being that floated right outside of our circle at Joshua Tree National Park, not too far from here, back a few years ago.
You have photos of this thing?
Yep.
Where can someone see that?
It's on the website, seriousdisclosure.com. If you link to the CE5 part of it, there's a whole section of this strange luminous thing. The photograph of that, it was a 3 or 4 second exposure. And what was seen right before this happened, which is really important for people to understand, was something about half the size of the size of my fist or a little bigger. It was like a sphere that floated over the desert in November of 2009. And several people saw it. And then we heard what sounded like a group of people talking. But with our night scope, there's nothing there. And then, so a woman on my team took her camera and just had a 3 or 4 second exposure, took a photograph. And in that area where this had happened, there was this being that was...
And did you see this with your eyes, or is this just...
No, because this would have been in a flash, but it's in the digital...
Is it possible that it's just an artifact?
No, it's not an artifact, absolutely not.
Why is that not possible? I mean, flashes always produce artifacts, they produce
orbs. She did not use a flash.
Oh, okay.
It was visible. The flash was... So in other words, this was no flashbulb, no... We don't allow flash photography when we're out. You got to have good night scopes, you have to have good cameras, you can adjust the ISO and the aperture and all that.
Campfires?
No, we never have campfires. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a complete darkness. The most you're going to see when we're out there is maybe an LED on a camera.
So whatever this thing was...
We know what it was.
You think it was...
Yeah, I'm very confident about what it was.
Have you ever been aboard a spaceship?
I've had some really amazing contact experiences that are classic. And they, you know, I had one when I was when I was 18 years old up on this mountain. And it was it wasn't at all what you hear about in the literature, because it was more in this transdimensional element area. And that becomes the whole question, is what part of what people are reporting is real and what part is Memorex? And right. This is something we haven't talked about yet. So what is the capacity for the intelligence community to hoax contact? And it's substantial.
Really?
Yeah.
You think a lot of people, they're hoaxing contact?
Yeah, for scaring the hell out of people.
Like in what way? How do they do that?
One of the things we learned about a number of years ago is actually not something I discovered. It was a man here who was looking into what are military-related abductions that are made to look ET but aren't. And you get into this whole question of what are they able to stagecraft for its psychological warfare value. And I have a document that's actually going to be in the film, and it's from the Strategic Studies Institute, talking about the staging of abductions and other scary things to create fear around the UFO issue.
So they create an artificial spacecraft and abduct people?
Well, they might use an ARV, an alien reproduction vehicle that's man-made. They may use robotic things that are called PLFs, programmed life forms, that are man-made but look very ET.
Programmed life forms?
Yeah, PLFs.
They have life forms that are like robots, essentially, that right. move around like people?
There are reports of that. And in fact...
reports of that.
And I think there's...
If you believe that, though?
Oh, yeah. I think Stan Romanek, if you look at the photograph he had of this thing, I think he was on Larry King or in some other shows, and this thing, Boo, it goes up and down. He's got a photo, and then there's a video that he hasn't released, but I've seen it, and other people on the team have seen it. And it's this very robotic-looking, it looks like a, quote, alien, but we know it isn't. The question is, why would they want to do something like that? I think if you can put enough information out there to scare people, why not scare them?
Well, it seems to me, though, that, look, the highest level robotics experts in the world today are pretty open about their work, because they're showing periodic improvements to the general public, like the DARPA robots, what they're doing in Japan. No one has come anywhere close to doing something along those lines. Not only that, they all have an external power source.
Well, yeah, but you're assuming that the things that you know about are all that they're in existence. But it's like saying that because you haven't flown on one of Lockheed's or Northrop's anti-gravity devices, they don't have those either. I think that
do they have those?
Yes.
They absolutely. Do. 100%.
Yes.
Ben
Rich all but said so, who's the head of Lockheed Skunk Works. So these are a lot of the things that people will see out near the Nellis Range or so-called Area 51 that are moving in these ways we were talking about earlier. Those are man-made. Those aren't ET. And if you go all the way back to the 40s in Germany during World War II and after, they were doing a lot of experiments with things that do electromagnetic lifter effect. And going back a little further, you look at T. Townsend Brown in late 1920s and then also the Klosky-Frost experiment, where they actually were able to create this effect of levitation and movement. So, again, there's a whole science here. And in the open aerospace literature in the late 40s and early 50s, they were saying the next big thing is gravity control and anti-gravity stuff and da-da-da-da-da. And then it went all one black. You can't find it. And one of the guys that I've worked with at the Naval Research Labs, which is the largest Department of Defense lab, told me that it was October of 54 when we really mastered gravity control. And all those projects went black. They just disappeared. But up until then, you can go back and find, and there were in the literature. Now, the fact that your average person at MIT doesn't know about this doesn't mean it didn't exist. And I think that there's a whole history of aerospace and technology that's hidden. Similarly, there's a whole history of robotics, genetics, biological studies, and what have you. And that had also been kept very classified.
You are either one really nutty dude, or you are a guy who has tapped into one of the craziest pieces of information that's being suppressed from the American public, and there's no room for a middle ground. Mm.
I know that every word I'm telling you is true.
I believe you. I believe that you believe that every word I do believe you. But this whole thing is so, it so strains credibility.
Yeah, it does. All of it does. Yeah. And you know what? I was told years ago that if you really told the whole truth about this, that it'll hide itself because no one can believe it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is kind of through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole on this subject. And it's a real problem because how far do you go in terms of telling what you and have discovered?
Well, it seems to me that you tapped into like a way to show people.
Yeah, well, I mean, but who's looking? I mean, it's like this FAA guy, John Callahan, who said, I've got the radar tapes, I got the pilot reports, but who's looking and who's asking?
Right.
Well, not 2020. You know, I mean, you asked about 2020. The guy who was executive producer of that came out to my house. I gave him 35 hours of digital stuff of all these top secret guys, all the documents, all this stuff. He said, this is the biggest story. It's either all a hoax or it's the biggest story in history. I said, yeah, well, I think it's the latter. And he says, I want to do this story. I said, I don't think they'll let you. And so we went back to corporate ABC. And a couple weeks later, he said, Dr. Greer, they won't let me do this story. I said, who are they? Ira. And he said, well, you know who they are. And I've had
producers. They're like, this crazy motherfucker. No.
This was the executive producer in charge of the show, both Primetime Live and 2020. And he's now with 60 Minutes. But I think that what...
I'd love to talk to him. What's his name?
Yeah, Ira Rosen.
I'd love to talk to him on the Question Everything show. That'd be fascinating.
Well, you know, I think that this is... the other big myth is that when you start dealing with the big media... that it's a free media. It's free to a point. I mean, it's no problem if you want to drill down on someone's sex scandal. But if you really want to deal with this issue, there's going to be a phone call. And you know, one of the documents that's up on our website, I wrote an article called Media Play. And in it is a document I got from the 1990s from the CIA that talks about how the CIA had embedded in all the major media people to change, alter, or stop stories. And this is an official document. So, you know, if the public listening out there think we really have a free market and a free media, you know, wake up. This is simply not the case. So I think that one of the challenges we've had is that the it's kind of an article of faith that if all this were true, wouldn't the media just really want to cover this? And I say, yeah, there are some really good people in the media who wanted to, but they're not allowed to. And so then there's a good way, who controls the big media? But I'm not talking about your show.
Yeah, because I mean, how many shows are out there dedicated to looking for UFOs? There seems like there's quite a bit. And those shows are owned by, you know, big media companies and networks that promote these shows. Yeah, you think it's just bullshit and what they're doing is paying lip service to it and not really looking and they're just covering the controversial aspects of it to get viewers?
Yes, I think a lot of it's shock and drivel and bread and circus. And I think that you then ask the question of, you know, years ago when I was on Larry King and afterwards I got this note from his producer that this is one of the most popular shows we've ever had. Mm-hmm. And so if it was just about ratings and just about whether there was anything legitimate there to cover, this would be in the news all the time. Mm-hmm. So there's something weird going on here because they'll cover all kinds of sensationalistic nonsense. But, you know, you have dozens of top secret witnesses. You have legitimate government documents. You have photographs, video, or you have teams like ours going out having these sort of experiences. That isn't covered. You have to ask the question why. And I think the wonderful thing about 2013 that didn't exist 5 or 10 years ago, Twitter, Facebook, video on demand. You know, you don't have to go to a big distributor. And actually, by the way, we're planning to distribute this film at the night of the premiere. Maybe we'll live stream it if we can figure out how to do it. Maybe you can help us.
I'll be happy to.
We need help with it, actually, because we're actually out of funds to
do
this production.
We'll contact Brad at Ustream.
Yeah.
Live stream the shit out of this bitch.
Yeah. And so what we want to do at the premiere is live stream it and then have the thing, and then it'll be VOD, video on demand, so that, you know, there's no chokehold in the big media. And then, you know, you couldn't have done that 5 or 10 years ago with any kind of value. Now you can do high definition. You can do really good video on demand. And we're going to do this so that everyone can sign up to be an affiliate distributor. So that basically, if you want to distribute the show, you can distribute it. And the people who see it, you know, there'll be a small fee to see it. And then you'll have part of that. And you just build that out. Because what we want to do is make this thing go viral. Uh-huh. So that we don't get into the chokeholds of the big media, because you know, I my experience with it is that I'm very, very skeptical of the big media doing anything with this until they have to. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes where there's too much noise out there. We have to give it a little bit of lip service and then we'll take it off again. So that's why, by the way, that's why we did this crowdfunding for this. It was that we really wanted the people to have a stake in it and to move the film series forward. Because if you went to a studio or a group of investors, you don't know what they're going to do with it if they control it. This way, the people own it.
So. Well, listen, man, this is a fascinating subject. Like I said, it's one of my personal interests and has been since I was a small child. To talk to you was a real treat. I really appreciate it.
I really appreciate it.
You put your neck out there, man. You say a lot of nutty shit, and it takes a lot of courage to do that, or you're crazy. I'm willing to believe you. I mean, I'm willing to be completely open to the point of I'll go out to the desert with you. I'll do whatever it is. I'm fascinated by all this stuff. And if what you're saying is true, it is, one of the most mind-blowing things our society has ever had access to, has ever been able to encounter. I mean,
right.
It's pretty crazy shit, man.
Well, welcome to the new millennium, because now it's time. Here we go.
I hope you're right. I mean, I hope this isn't just crazy talk. April 22nd is the day. It's in Los Angeles at LA Live, which is where?
It's the Regal LA Live.
The Regal LA Live. Mm-hmm. And how can people either find out about this or get to this, or if people want to go?
SiriusDisclosure.com, and you can go there and you can get the tickets and everything and sign up right there. Everything can be done online.
And is the film done?
It's going into final completion in the next 3 weeks or so, yeah.
Okay, so April 22nd is when it's all going down, and that is – hopefully you will already have the information from this Ivy League Institute about this alien being by then, correct?
Or this humanoid being.
Humanoid,
that we don't know what it is.
Yeah, whatever it is. Whatever it is.
And we will. We already have a lot of it, but we're waiting for the final genetic sequencing.
Okay, and if people want to follow you on Twitter, it's Dr. Stephen Greer, Steven, not one of those weirdos that says Stephen, but it's with a PH.
Who does that?
Some weirdos.
PH here.
Yeah, a lot of weirdos. Stephen PH. That's Stefan, right?
Stefan.
Okay. Dr. Stephen Greer, Steven Greer. And one more time, the website is?
SiriusDisclosure.com, SIRIUS, Disclosure.com.
This has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you very much. It's been really interesting. And, I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes.
We'll see you at the premiere.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Will you do this again? Will you come by?
Yeah, I'd love to.
It'd be great. Around the time of the premiere?
Yeah, we'll have all the new findings.
Yes, please. All right, we're going to have some fun. Listen. Folks, thanks for tuning in. We have a crazy week this week. We have Tom Segura is going to be on Tuesday. David is going to be on, right?
That's so fucking crazy.
David Lee Ross here on Wednesday. And on Friday, Dr. Amit Goswami, theoretical physicist.
Okay, everybody, now we'll start the next.
Okay.
When was the next one done?
This most recent one we're going to start now was done on November 21st from, what was it, noon to 4 something Eastern time. 2 to 6 Eastern time, that's right. Okay, this is November 21st, How the Secret Government Works, the Most Explosive Exposé. Here we go.
Hey!
Come on, Ellie. Pay attention. Kitties will do what they do.
Okay, I would like to welcome all of you to this special presentation on the deep national security state and UFOs. And this is going to be a presentation 4 hours in length. We will take a break at about the halfway point, maybe about an hour and 45 minutes in, 2 hours. And I'd like to just thank all of you for coming. I know you've been from all over the country here, people here from Chicago, New York, all over, and I want to express my appreciation for your support and effort in coming all that way to be here. I'd also like to welcome all the folks online. There's several thousand people online who will be seeing this by webinar, And I'd like to extend a welcome to them and a big shout out to them for coming. Thank you. You're here in virtual reality, huh? Yeah, why not? So I'm Dr. Stephen Greer, and I'm the founder of the Disclosure Project and the Center for the Study of Extraterrestrial Intelligence and the Orion Project. Those are all now sort of amalgamated under SiriusDisclosure.com if you want to go and see what all the projects are doing at any time. And we're going to be doing this presentation, which is going to be part of a series. I really want to thank the people who've supported me all these years in getting this far. There's some folks who are volunteers out front who've been on many expeditions with me out under the stars, and people all over the world. My mentors in the national security state, who without them I would have never had a Sherpa to figure out how this whole system works. You're going to learn things tonight, today, that the President of the United States doesn't know. I will assure you of that. I will give you my assurance that it's true. It is also true that without some very special person, and her name is Emily, my wife of 36 years, we wouldn't be here. So a big thank you to Emily. She set this up. And really and truly, if Emily had not supported me all these years, there aren't many Jewish doctors, daughters, wives, who will be happy with their husband leaving a career in emergency medicine to be doing this for virtually nothing for 25 years. And that's when we started this project 25 years ago. So she's an amazing person. And without her, we would have never, ever gotten this far. She's really been the indispensable person that nobody knows about. And I want to acknowledge her. So thank you, Emily. Love you. So the other thing I'd like to do, as we just some housekeeping things, again, no cell phones, please. And if there are any children who are on the webinar, I know this sounds strange. We're going to go through some things that are disturbing, and I would say parental discretion is advised for that reason. I usually would not say that, but we are today, and I need to say it. And the first thing I want to go through is sort of an architecture of what the deep national security state is. Because this is something that when I started out in 1990, I didn't think could possibly be true. And in fact, when I was meeting with the French government officials a few years ago here in Washington and then out at our farm in Virginia, I got a phone call from an Air Force intelligence guy and a liaison to the French president at that time, Nicolas Sarkozy, who said, this is fantastic and terrible. And he didn't know if he quite believed it. And I said, well, come to Washington and I'll let you meet with some folks, deep national security state, who will confirm everything I'm about to tell you. So they came to Washington and we had a meeting. And I began to explain to them that there are two governments. There's the government of we the people, that Thomas Jefferson spoke of, that we have elected, and those who have been appointed. And since World War II, there has evolved a monster, which you're going to hear about, which desperately needs to be put on a leash and eventually phased out. And that is the deep national security state of unacknowledged special access projects. Now, this is a term most people are not familiar with. Almost most of you, if you're anyone here from D.C., raise your hand if you're a D.C. person. You probably have heard of TSSCI, Top Secret Special Compartmented Intelligence. A top secret clearance are like 985,000 people who have them. It's, you know, that and $1.50 will get you on the metro. So those are not unusual. What's unusual are the projects I'm about to talk to you about. And these unacknowledged special access projects are projects that have not been supervised by the president or the Congress in an appropriate way since 1956, at least 1956. And this is a key date for you to keep in mind. I was 1 year old, so I couldn't do anything about that. Most of us here weren't of an age where we could have done anything about that disaster. But we're going to talk about how that evolved and how an unacknowledged special access project really operates. The very first thing you need to understand is that it developed as a consequence of the extraordinary secrecy around the UFO issue. And if you doubt it, it goes all the way back to 1945. And I'm going to go through some documents. The one that's up here is one that we acquired and released. It's now the number one viewed document on the FBI site, this one. But before I get to that, I want to talk about what happened in the 1940s in World War II. So most of you know we had President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And there were events going on in Europe and also in the Pacific, but mainly in Europe, where there were these things called Foo Fighters. Yes, it's a rock group. And Dave Grohl, it's a great guy, he named his band after what I'm about to tell you. But a Foo Fighter, aside from being a really fun rock band, were objects that were flying around our aircraft in World War II. Sometimes they were fully materialized, hard. Most of the time, they were an energy field that looked spherical. And they could come through an aircraft, even coming down the center of an aircraft and out the other end. This is the trans-dimensional nature of extraterrestrial technologies that I covered in a previous workshop. This became a huge concern for the Allies. And the Allies dispatched, or the president, I should say, on behalf of the Allies, dispatched a man named General Jimmy Doolittle. Now, how do I know this? Because his nephew, the dear friend of mine, Dr. John Altshuler. Dr. Altshuler is a hematologist, oncologist in Denver, very renowned. And he was asked, General Doolittle was asked to go over to the theater of operations in Europe to find out what the hell these things were. Now, the word Foo Fighters come from sort of French and German faux for fire, because they were these fiery, had a luminous corona around them. And but they would disrupt electromagnetic signals. They would have effects on the gravity around an aircraft and other things such as guidance systems, compasses, and what have you. And so we thought, the Americans and British thought, it was a secret Nazi weapon. And we found out through our spies that the Germans thought it was a secret Allied weapon. And, of course, it was neither. So General Doolittle went over and investigated this and came back to the White House and reported back to President Roosevelt and said, "Sir, these are interplanetary vehicles," I'm quoting. And so began the modern era of a serious concern from the national security level about UFOs. You can argue it went back to the airship scare of late 1890s, where there were massive crafts seen off the coast of California, but there wasn't that much official concern at that point. It was sort of an enigma. But in World War II, because of the type of weapons being developed, both by Hitler and by America, the interstellars, as I call them, became very concerned about what humans were doing on Earth and the risk of us destroying this planet, which I believe, in carefully in analyzing the history of this, that they have a interest in its survival and humanity's survival. And so the president at that point did assemble a group of folks that included Oppenheimer, people who worked on the Manhattan Project, Dr. Vannevar Bush, no relationship to President Bush, and others to look into the issue. By the time we detonated the first atomic bomb, the facilities at White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico and Alamogordo, that area, were being overflown regularly by UFOs. And they were very concerned, obviously, that we were developing weapons that could terminate life on the planet. And they could see where this was headed. So this was not something that just happened out of the blue.
There's a history here you must understand. In the early days, and I'm talking now from the early mid-1940s to 1956, there was a reasonable level of constitutional oversight by key members of Congress, senior people in the administrations, and the President of the United States. Everything changed in 1956. Now, when we had the only nuclear, and actually technically it's an atomic bomb squadron and not a thermonuclear one that was developed later. Everybody know the difference between atomic and thermonuclear? Atomic bomb is fission, nuclear is fusion, hydrogen. Anyway, the atomic bomb that we dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki was developed, as you all know, in New Mexico, and was tested at White Sands, and eventually in Roswell, New Mexico, that was the only bomber squadron that had atomic bombs in the world for a number of years before the Soviet Union developed them. And in 1947, there were two or three, I have intelligence recently that indicates there were three so-called flying saucers, discs, flying by and doing surveillance of the 509th Bomber Squadron, which was the only atomic bomb squadron in the world. And they switched on, suddenly, an alleged radar system. Read this document carefully. Now, this, I know it's hard for you to see the original. It's dated 1950. It was to J. Edgar Hoover. The Edgar Hoover building's right near here. And an Air Force source stated that there were three flying saucers recovered in New Mexico. They're described as circular in shape with raised centers, 50 feet in diameter. Each one was occupied by three bodies of human shape, but only 3 feet tall. They're actually about 39 inches tall. In metallic cloth, very fine texture, etc. And it says that the saucers were found in New Mexico due to the fact that the government has a very high-powered radar set up in that area, and it's believed the radar interferes with the controlling mechanism of the saucers. This is a little bit anthropocentric and childish, because if you can go interstellar, you can handle a radar system. What actually happened is that those radar domes had or longitudinal electromagnetic weapon, which is another whole classification of electromagnetic warfare systems that we'll get into later. But suffice it to say, it was an early scalar Star Wars hit. And when they switched that on, at least two of these discs collided. One went down northwest of Roswell, the other one continued and was more intact and was impacted near Socorro, New Mexico. Wow. And that's where they actually retrieved the bodies. The ones that was just north of Roswell was obliterated into little teeny pieces, pieces. Where they did retrieve, and we have Disclosure Project witnesses who have testified to this, who have personally seen what looks like almost hieroglyphic writing on some of the little parts that were retrieved, and I know I've seen these, and it's very interesting because it's reminiscent of the ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics, but not quite the same. But you wonder where the pyramids came from. So that event was an early hit. Now there are some reports of others, but that's the most documented one. This document from the FBI is significant because obviously 3 years later, you had one branch of the government trying to find out what the other top-secret branch of the government was doing. You can tell by the tone of it. I made inquiries through here and there. So it's a bunch of skullduggery that happens between agencies and competition. And there's always been competition between FBI, CIA, Air Force intelligence, et cetera, and so on. And this happens not just with the United States. It also happens between allies and alliances. For example, the next document, if you can pull this up, this is one of the most important documents. And by the way, after I briefed the CIA director about all this stuff, the sitting CIA director for President Clinton, which we'll get into in a moment, I got a cache of several thousand of these documents, about 5,000 of them. And they're in my vault. I don't know what to do with them. If we presented what was in them, it would take us from now until 2017. But let me just say that this document was accidentally released by the Canadian government. And if you look at the date on it, 1950, November 21st. How ironic. This is the 65th anniversary of the writing of this document by Wilbur Smith, who had a top secret clearance, and he was tasked by the Canadian government to find out what the Americans were doing. And if you look at page two, if you go down to page two of this, you're going to see just a brief summary, which I think is, there's a whole lot of detail in the document. This is on our website now. You can look it up. Many of you may have seen this one already, but the reason I want to present it is the importance of the document. And it says, the matter is the most highly classified subject in the United States government, rating higher than the H-bomb. Think about that. The H-bomb wasn't detonated until 1952. It was the ultimate doomsday weapon. This project dealing with UFOs and interstellar technologies was more highly classified than the H-bomb. Period. B, flying saucers exist. Period. Their modus operandi is unknown, but a concentrated effort is being made by a small group of headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush, who also worked with Edward Teller, Oppenheimer, and others. And four, the entire matter is considered by the United States authorities to be of tremendous significance. I have a whole dossier that a Canadian put together of the Wilbur Smith investigations on behalf of the Canadian government to find out what in the hell the Americans were doing with these extraterrestrial vehicles. It's a fascinating case. Now, the reason this is so important is that it acknowledges several things, that they exist, that it's the most secret issue in the U.S. government, exceeding the secrecy of the H-bomb, and that a group had been put together to study how they operate. Well, they were studying materiel recovered from one or more interstellar crashes that were the result of using these scalar longitudinal electromagnetic systems, which Tesla had worked on and others had worked on in the early part of the 20th century. Keep in mind that by the early 1900s, there had been experiments done on not only scalar and electromagnetics, that longitudinal systems, which are, just put it in a simple layman's term, the light in this room that we're looking at, it has a wave function and a particle function. It goes 186,000 miles a second. A scalar longitudinal system is, there's no wave. It's boom, and it's a point. And it's multiples of the speed of light. And so once you understand how these operate, and I have folks at the Naval Research Labs here in Washington who have done communication systems developed based on pulsed scalar systems that are multiple of the speed of light. So if you think that you cannot communicate faster than the speed of light, you are wrong. And the physicists are wrong. It's because they don't know about the scalar end of this, but that's enough because that's all classified. They're not going to teach you that at MIT or Caltech. So these systems have been developed and have been deployed since at least the mid-1940s, which is a frightening thought because it's an area of technology that is potentially devastating if it's in the wrong hands. And unfortunately, it fell into the wrong hands, and there it remains. So one of the things that happened along the lines around this time, the next document, important one, look at the release date. It was a few months after I briefed the CIA director. So after I met with him, I said, look, I'm going to give you a list of stuff I want to see if I can get. I got this massive box. Came out to my farm in Virginia. And this was one of them, and there are others. And it's from 1953, although you can't see the date on it very well here. And it's written by the director of the CIA to the director of Psychological Strategy Board. Psychological Strategy Board. What? Psychological warfare. And it says, you can read it, I'm transmitting to the National Security Council a proposal, tab BA, which we don't have, which is concluded that the problems connected to UFOs appear to have implications for psychological warfare as well as for intelligence and operations. And then there's another tab B, which has the background. I'd love to see that one. I suggest that we discuss in an early board meeting the possible offensive or defensive utilization of these phenomena for psychological warfare purposes. Remember this document 4 hours from now. Because basically what they concluded was they needed to do a few things. They wanted to be able to set up a deception around the subject and put out false information, use it as a cover story for classified aerospace research. So oftentimes there will be something that happens and it will look like a UFO, and it's actually a Northrop Grumman. My uncle's company was Northrop Grumman. He worked on the thing that landed on the moon, the lunar module. Or Lockheed Martin Skunk Works or some other aerospace entity, and it will be 100% man-made, and the public will say, oh my God, it's a UFO. And they'll not correct them. There's no correction forthcoming. They want you to believe it's a UFO. Why? Because it provides a cover for classified research with technologies that, if they were allowed to come out, would terminate the oil and gas and coal industry.
Yippee!
They're using zero-point energy and gravity control. Which then brings me to the next issue. And that is, by 1954, October, so now we're 61 years plus 1 month, into an era, and this was confirmed to me by the third highest ranking official at the Naval Research Labs and the highest ranking scientist, in other words, someone who wasn't a bureaucrat, at the Naval Research Labs, which Thomas Edison founded, and the Naval Research Labs is the largest defense lab in the United States. And Richard Foch, and I knew him for many years before he passed away of prostate cancer not too long ago, was this gentleman. I've never wanted to discuss who he was until he passed away. Mm-hmm. And he was a very senior guy in this system. And one of the things that he shared is that he was in the vault, the same vault that the next document came out of, which has a great story behind it. And he was going through some documentation and found that it wasn't in the 50s that we really started, I mean the 60s or 70s, but it was in the 50s that we actually mastered gravity control. Now, what does that mean? Gravity control is the ability to put an electromagnetic field at certain voltages and with certain angular momentum. I don't want to get into a lot of, put you to sleep again, into the physics of it too far. So that this object becomes massless, weightless, no mass, M-A-S-S. So the mass component, and this has to do with angular momentum and things of this sort, of the subatomic particles can make this object so light that it has no mass, which means if you look at your physics equations, mass, velocity is inversely proportional to mass. Go look it up. So if mass becomes zero, velocity can go to infinity in a given amount of energy. You can move into another dimension. It doesn't go to infinity. You go trans-dimensional. We'll talk about this some more later. And this began to be experimented with in the 1920s. A guy named T. Townsend Brown developed a system using crystalline structures and voltages going into an object so that an object would begin to levitate. Marcel Vogel, the chief engineer scientist for IBM in North Carolina on the Reynolds estate, did the same thing in the 60s and 70s. One of the members of my team and one of our disclosure project witnesses worked with Marcel Vogel, doing this with crystalline structures. And it can be crystals, but it can also be nanocrystalline materials such as metallic. So, as you know, most metals and rocks are crystal. Actually, water is crystalline. We're crystalline. So you can put this system around almost anything, and it will begin to become increasingly massless. Now, it doesn't have to be zero mass. Maybe it's 0.1 mass. So it's still materialized. You see it. But it means, man, can you accelerate this thing? So it means you can, instead of going like the space shuttle at 25,000 miles an hour, you can go at several million miles per hour and take a right turn. And there's no deceleration effect because everyone on board is corrected for 1G. So this is what they began, 1G gravitational force. So this is what began to develop in the 20s, got taken into some Army Air Force projects in the 30s and 40s, and was Adolf Hitler's secret weapon. Adolf Hitler, they weren't making the progress on the atomic bomb that we were, but they had almost perfected gravity control by the time World War II ended. Now, one of the things that the OSS did, the Office of the Special Services, which became the CIA after World War II, they had something, you can look this up, called Operation Paperclip. And Operation Paperclip, a whole book was written on it not too long ago, about how they would put a paperclip on the file of the Nazis that we didn't want to go to Nuremberg and execute, but that whose knowledge was so great that we wanted them as part of our program. We wanted what they knew. So one of these guys is a guy named Wernher von Braun, who, of course, invented the rocket, the V-2 rocket for Adolf Hitler. Hermann Oberth. These were all the giants of rocketry and aerospace for Adolf Hitler. They became the foundation of, brought in by the CIA, what became the CIA, of our space program in the 1940s and 50s, which is how we leapt ahead of the Soviet Union. Because we took all those people first, ahead of the Soviet Union. Interesting bit of history. You don't read this many places. But a lot of what I'm telling you is in conventional history books, not the UFO part. That's been sanitized out. That's forbidden knowledge. So as a result, by the time we had those guys and the experimentation that had been done with Townsend Brown, whose work became a part of a corporation called the RAND Corporation, which still exists, a huge think tank. We really had something going. You add to this the study of materiel and electronics retrieved interstellar vehicles that were shot down. So a lot of people say, oh, well, the things we have, are they all just reverse engineered from interstellar ET? I said, no. The laws of the universe are universal. And the mind of man, just like the man of an ET, can unravel the mysteries of the universe. And so it has come to pass. But if you take, we're not starting at zero when we retrieve the objects that were interstellar. We were starting with decades of research in classified electronics, electromagnetic, anti-gravity, scalar systems, et cetera, and so on, that had been going on since the time of Nikola Tesla, the true genius of the 20th century, not Albert Einstein, by the way, so who is a minor luminary compared to Tesla. And, sorry, Einstein fans, it's true. By the way, that's why when Nikola Tesla died, the FBI swooped into his apartment and confiscated all of his secret papers. And how do I know this? I have a document, Department of Defense, demanding that the FBI turn them over and names them for what they are, the secret papers of Nikola Tesla. This is not an urban myth. I have that document. It came in this cache of documents I'm talking about. So when you have all of that knowledge, it's then augmented, increased, potentiated by the study of, as the Wilbur Smith document says, the materiel that was interstellar. Because you need specialized materials. You need control systems. You need integrated circuits, which we did not have in the 40s, which came from this. You need fiber optics. You need all kinds of stuff. So some of the technologies, and this is where Colonel Corso, who worked on these projects tangentially, is correct. If you read The Day After Roswell, he says fiber optics, integrated circuits, and a whole slew of things came from studying the materiel from these crashed ET interstellar objects. So you had the biggest and most top secret, most well-funded project in the history of the United States going on. Nobody knew about it. It's completely sub rosa. It was more secret than the hydrogen bomb. And so between 1945 and 1954, the brain power of those Nazi aerospace folks like Wernher von Braun and Herbert Oberth, the work of T. Townsend Brown and others, Edward Teller, some of the brightest and most ingenious people in the world, bent their attention primarily not to the hydrogen bomb, but to gravity control. And how are these interstellar visitors getting here? Because that would then be the ultimate edge, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. In the technological arms race. You talk about a delivery system. You don't need an intercontinental ballistic missile that goes a few thousand miles an hour if you can deliver something instantly from one continent to another, or worse, from one planet to another. You begin to see the implications of this for national security. Therefore, it was managed in an extraordinary fashion. And the secrecy around it was increasingly ruthless. So much so that by 1956, the President of the United States, a man named Dwight Eisenhower, most of us drive on Eisenhower-era highways using 1880s Mercedes-type internal combustion engine cars that are run by fossil fuels, all of which have been obsolete since the 1940s or sooner. But Eisenhower was a five-star general, became president, two-term president, and was a Republican, very patriotic, but also very naively trusting. Jackie Gleason, the very famous comedian, his wife, were friends with some folks that have been on my team before they passed away, and said that Eisenhower on his deathbed was a very bitter man over what happened to him between 1954 and when he left office in early 1961 when Jack Kennedy became the President of the United States. And in 1956, a man named Nelson Rockefeller, who later, of course, became Vice President, and prior to that was an operative in the military-industrial complex and the emerging deep national security state, Nelson headed up what's called the Rockefeller Commission. And the Rockefeller Commission in 1956 reorganized the Pentagon, Department of Defense, CIA, the whole alphabet soup of secret entities. And they did so in such a way that it became labyrinthine, Byzantine, almost impossible to penetrate by anyone who wanted to navigate through it. In the early days, there was still some presidential knowledge. We have one of our witnesses, Mr. Lovkin, who is an attorney, who was a young man, White House Signal Corps here at the White House down the street from where we're speaking today. You can look at his testimony on our website, seriousdisclosure.com, and he said, yes, he would be at meetings and Eisenhower would be making doodles, pictures of UFOs and ET craft. In fact, I have one sitting in my condo here in D.C. that someone lifted from the archives, I won't say where and how. And he said basically Eisenhower was voiced to him a great frustration over the fact that there were all these projects going on and he had lost control of the oversight of them. So what happened with the Rockefeller Commission in 1956 is they made it virtually impossible for any ordinary congressman or president. You know, they come every 4 to 8 years, don't they? So by the time they leave, even if they're there 8 years, maybe they're a little less wet behind the ears. But it's a system that guarantees their ignorance, except to the extent that they want to give you just enough information to control what's going on. We'll get into this in a moment. So by the time Eisenhower left office, he made the very famous speech about beware the military-industrial complex, as you've seen in the film Sirius. By the way, Sirius became number one on Netflix a few months ago. Cool. Thank you guys for supporting that. And the president said it will become a threat to our national security and our way of life, not the UFOs, the secrecy. No less a figure the same year, Admiral Roscoe Hillenkoetter, who was the first director of the CIA. Go look this document up. I may have more documents than we have time for me to go through. And it's a letter where he's writing and saying that the secrecy around the UFO subject is a threat to our national security and to the United States. This is the first CIA director, because he also later found out he was being Schmidt-canned, pushed aside by these neo-fascists who had taken over the intelligence community, the aerospace community, and the large corporations. What happened over those years from 1947 until 1950 was that there was a deliberate, albeit imperceptible initially, takeover by the corporate state. Mm-hmm. Corporations working with unacknowledged special access projects, which are completely off the radar, not funded officially, took over operations. And as a result of that, those national security programs increasingly became out of reach for the president, out of reach for members of Congress, or even cabinet-level people like CIA directors and secretaries of state and secretaries of state and people of this sort. So this was a gradual thing that happened, but there was an abrupt change by 56. By 1961, when Eisenhower left office, frankly, we were done. It was done. Now, you know, I couldn't do anything about that at that point. Couldn't run the disclosure project because I was only 5 years old or six. And so it just suffered and went along. And the national security apparatus got bigger and bigger and bigger. When Jack Kennedy took over in January of 1961, he had a great interest in this. And he was, in fact, briefed on the subject. But as we know from a Lieutenant Halt, who was on the early meetings I had that ironically Nelson's brother Lawrence Rockefeller, who is the white hat in the Rockefeller clan, who actually wanted to end secrecy on the subject. Lawrence Rockefeller was a very early supporter of CSETI and the Disclosure Project. And he funded and I organized the Asilomar Monterey gathering of KGB, CIA, astronauts, cosmonauts in 1995. And what I found is that some of the people who came had been involved with the Kennedy administration. And one of these gentlemen, this lieutenant colonel, was on Air Force One flying to Berlin when Kennedy made that very famous speech, "I am a Berliner." Although I think he misspoke it a little. But from what I hear from the Germans. But on that flight, this Air Force officer, who was sort of like the chief steward who sort of ran Air Force One for the president, had a chat. And this issue came up because he had been a pilot who had seen one of these UFOs as an Air Force pilot. And there are thousands of sightings like this that we have in our archive. And he brought this up to the president. He says, "Oh, yes, I know about this." He says, "I've been briefed on it a little bit, but," and now I'm quoting, I have this audio tape. It is chilling audio tape. But he says, unfortunately, the whole matter, this is the president speaking, the whole matter is out of my hands, and I don't know why, and began to cry. So we know, and that was 1963, June of 63, and of course he was killed in November. But before that, other tragic things happened. There are a lot of tragedies here, the main thing being the loss of almost a century of it by the human race, which is why I left medicine. I always tell people, I used to say, try to save a life one at a time. Now we have to do something to save the entire human race and planet from what is a disastrous situation that's developed. So I just say that now all of us have to work together because our patient is Gaia, the Earth, and her 7 billion children. But if you look at this document, the next one, this is a very dangerous document to have. I'm going to have to give you the provenance of this. This is the Marilyn Monroe document. It's basically a death warrant for poor Marilyn Monroe. And you look at the date on it, 3 August 1962. They found her dead the 5th of August. It's signed by James Jesus Angleton III at the bottom. Project Moondust up at the top, and Project 46. These are correct code names and code numbers for UFO ET projects by the agency as of that date. And as you read through it, and it gives some background, it's a wiretap summary if you look at the top of it. I know it's a very degraded document, but it's a wiretap summary of telephone conversations between Marilyn Monroe and Robert Kennedy, the Attorney General, and a guy named Rothberg, who was a art dealer in New York. And they were tapping Marilyn's phone because she had had tryst, as it says here, with the president. And everyone knows now she had an affair with both Jack Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. And in pillow talk, the president had told her some things. And it says one such secret that she was going to divulge in a news conference mentions the visit by the president at a secret airbase for the purpose of inspecting things from outer space. I don't think they're talking about meteorites. Kilgallen, who had been a reporter who dug into this, replied that she knew what might be the source of the visit. In the mid-50s, Kilgallen learned of a secret effort by U.S. and U.K. governments to identify the origins of crashed spacecraft and dead bodies from a British government official. That was Lord Mountbatten. Kilgallen believed the story, who was later blown up by an IRA bomb, or so it was made to appear. Kilgallen believed the story may have come from the New Mexico crash in the late 40s, clear reference to the Roswell event. And she said that if the story is true, it would cause terrible embarrassment to Jack and his plans to have NASA put men on the moon, because we were using old rockets from the 40s when the secret organization already had anti-gravity under control. The subject repeatedly called the attorney general and complained about the way she was being ignored by the president. The subject threatened to hold a press conference and would tell all, underline in the original document. That's not my underlining. The subject made references to bases in Cuba and knew of the president's plan to kill Castro. And number five, the subject made references to her diary of secrets and what the newspapers would do with such disclosures. 2 days later, she's found dead. Now, this document, how did I get it? It's top secret, and it has not been declassified, and it is authentic. A man whose family helped found the National Security Agency, NSA, was so supportive of what the work I was doing that he appeared one day with this document. And it was a huge, one of those old Xerox from a big, you know, government Xerox machine. The original I have in my vault is quite impressive. And he says, you need to know the kinds of things. I think he was not trying to scare me off, but he was wanting me to know the kinds of things that have been done to people who tell these kind of secrets. And so he gave me this document. And as soon as I saw it, I suspected it was legitimate. Later, I had it inspected by a man who I don't wish to name, but he was the officer who was General Odom, O-D-O-M, who was head of the NSA for years. He was General Odom's right-hand guy, literally carried his briefcase. And he became a document authenticator and a lecturer at the University of Maryland who, frankly, when he looked at it, he says, without me taking it from the vault myself, I can tell you 95% certainty it's authentic because everything in it. So basically what happened is that Marilyn Monroe was being jilted by the Kennedys because it was becoming too well known they were having an affair. The Kennedys did not order her assassination. Angleton did. Now, who is Angleton? Angleton was the big, whole books have been written about this guy. James Jesus Angleton III was the guy who at the CIA was the big mole hunter. He was the guy who would chase down anywhere a leak was coming from and had everyone tapped. And he realized that she was about to light this up and hold a press conference to talk about the ET bodies from outer space and all these secrets that Jack Kennedy had told her just out of spite. She was just furious that they had sort of pushed her out of the inner circle. And, you know, the whole thing about a woman scorned. But unfortunately for Marilyn, it cost her life. I later, after I got this document, met with a man who at that time had worked in the intelligence unit of the Los Angeles Police Department who separately had a wiretap on her in her home, who confirmed to me this was 100% true. Now, I don't know how many of you know a guy named Burl Ives, who's a actor and singer, and everyone thinks he was like Frosty the Snowman, but he was actually a very accomplished actor and folk singer and very good friends with Marilyn Monroe, Elizabeth Taylor, people like that. And he was on my executive committee for a number of years, and by the time he was involved, I had that document. And I went to visit him. They had moved from Montecito in Santa Barbara up to Anacortes, Washington. And I was in his room. I was actually sitting on the edge of his bed. He was up there in years. Big, jolly guy. Great bear of a guy. And I shared this document with him. He says, oh, my God. He's a 33rd degree Mason, by the way. He says, we all know, every one of us knew Marilyn had been killed. But we never knew why. We had no idea why. This is why. This is the thing. And so that was also a shot across the bow to the Kennedys. Now, Jack Kennedy had great affection for Marilyn, even though it was indiscreet for him to continue seeing her. And he was furious that someone in the intelligence community, I don't even think he certainly didn't know about this document. He was very upset, is what I understand, that Marilyn was killed by these operatives. And he vowed to try to bring out this information himself. And I think that's why he began to speak a little more openly to this Air Force officer whose audio recording I have. And that was, of course, a year later. This happened in August of 62. The recording with the Air Force officer, that conversation with Jack Kennedy, happened in 1963, June. In November, he was assassinated. As Kennedy was planning, if he had become the president, he was going to dissolve the CIA, get us out of Vietnam, disclose this information, and make peace with the Soviet Union. That's what he was going to do. And those in the intelligence community and the warmongers and the profiteers and the military-industrial complex said, like bloody hell, you will. And that was the end of him. So that's why, I mean, although I thought they were joking initially, when I first... Is this good information for you folks? I hope it's not too much, but I'm going to cover an enormous amount today. You've got to know the background. So over this time period from 1945, 40s to 19, early 60s, there developed, a decision was made. I know this sounds like a joke because everyone says it. If I tell you, I have to kill you. But there's some truth to that. So the secrecy that got developed around this issue became more and more and more restricted, even from people who were presidents or Senate Intelligence Committee members or members of the cabinet. Because another man who was killed, John Foster Dulles, shoved out of a window. Dulles was killed. He had been CIA director. He was starting to make noises about changing the direction of things, and he was also killed. Dulles Airport's named after him. So the decision was made, how do we do this without risking having to continue to engage in the wet works? And there's a guy I know at the CIA who kind of has my back, who has been there for years, PhD guy, who has a team of wet works guys. Wet works are assassinations. So wet works are wet comes from blood. So, you know, you don't want to pull the trigger on wet works if you don't have to. So they've decided here in the 50s and 60s to create so much secrecy and have it so compartmentalized and tightly held that they didn't want to risk doing that anymore, because it was really to the nation. And that is really the genesis of unacknowledged special access projects. Now, a special access project just means you have to have the clearance to get to it and be read into it, as they say in military speak. But an unacknowledged project, I just want to go through a minute how that works. Let's say that this gentleman is a four-star general, and I'm a colonel. I made you a four-star general. But I'm in an unacknowledged special access project dealing with this or some other subject. It can be other things as well. If I am in an unacknowledged project, I am told, and I have one of my most senior military advisors has been in multiple of these. He was in one project that was $2 to $3 billion. He knew it was more than two and almost $3 billion in a project that was off the books, no accounting, president didn't know, Congress didn't know, tightly held, military guy working with some corporate folks. And he told me, he says, here's how it works. He says, they take you to a SCIF, a Secure Communication Intelligence Facility, SCIF. Take all the equipment off of you, any guns off, cell phones, watches, nothing, anything metallic. You go into this underground facility, and there's a meeting. And he said, hey, you have a come into Jesus talk. And what happens is that you are told that only the people in that room are read into and cleared to this unacknowledged special access project. And if you speak of it outside of that circle of people, there's one person there with a gun and a bullet. He takes the bullet out. He says, it has your name on it. If you speak to anyone, and I mean anyone, your wife, the president, your commander, about what we're doing. And that is how it works. This is not a conspiracy theory. I've been in these SCIFs. I've been in a couple places. And I can tell you that is exactly how it operates. So one of the things I wanted to make really clear about what I'm presenting today, I'm not talking about anything that I don't have firsthand direct knowledge of. Everything I'm telling you, every bit of it. But I don't care about conspiracy theories. They're mostly 99% wrong. And I really don't care about the internet chatter. You know, this is 25 years of the most incredible investigative research. And, you know, I put over $10 million of my earnings in life into doing to get this far. And I can tell you, if you're in an unacknowledged project, and I was offered this position back in 92, and asked my wife about it, and I rejected it. I was actually offered $2 billion personally, if a fund with $2 billion in it, if I would shut the hell up. Join one of these unacknowledged projects and do what they wanted me to do. And I said, screw you. I'm not doing it. But that's what was offered. And that's when $1 billion was a lot of money back then. Now, you know, they're minting a billionaire every week in Silicon Valley. But, you know, in 1992, $2 billion was a lot of money. So What ended up happening in this scenario is that if my four-star commanding general calls me in because he's heard rumblings about something that people are working on he didn't know about, under threat of death, TWEEP, terminate with extreme prejudice, which is death, TWEP, I am to turn to him, even though he's my four-star commanding, I'm only a colonel, and I'm to say, sir, no such project exists. That's how it works. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. It's criminal. It's dangerous. Because once you have a breakdown in the rule of law, mm-hmm. we're back in the jungle. Mm-hmm. We're back into Al-Qaeda territory. Mm-hmm. We're back into the Wild West where there's a lawlessness. And that's what happened. And because of that, no president since Eisenhower has had anything near the level of information on this that would be required for the chief executive. Most CIA directors haven't. There are a few who have and a few who haven't. And I'll tell you a little bit about why that's the case in a moment. Who's been in and who's out? Dick Helms was in. Woolsey was out. It's a long story, but I mean, I'll try to cover it. I mean, you guys are going to get more information. It's going to be TMI, too much information by the end of this. But this is why I'm doing this today, is that I want to leave a record of everything I've learned that's critical for the public in case, you know, I'm 60 now. Who knows what will happen to me? So it's important to leave this. But if you're the president, don't assume that you have an all-access pass. The presidential daily briefing doesn't have anything really that critical in it. And almost never this subject. By the time you had Johnson come around, and then you had Nixon, and Nixon, by the way, was vice president for Eisenhower. Nixon actually was pulled in as head of the Space Committee. The vice president sits as chair of the Space Committee into Majestic. This group, MAGIC, M-A-J-I-C is actually what it's called. It's a majority Intelligence Committee, M-A-J-I-C is the proper term. And MAGIC tapped Nixon, and he thought his president would be the guy that would disclose this. Ugh. Because he thought it was time, and he was finally became president after Jack Kennedy, he felt, swindled him out of the presidency in 1960. Uh-huh. And then, of course, Lyndon Johnson inherited the presidency, in a sense, after the assassination, had one term, part of another, the rest of Jack Kennedy's term. But Nixon thought, well, okay, I'm going to do this. And so Watergate happened. Everybody remember Watergate? Mm-hmm. Those of you too young to remember, it was the break-in over here at this office in a luxury apartment on the Potomac. And it was a bag job. Bagmen went in and broke into the Democratic National Committee offices to get lists and information, and Nixon ended up covering it up. I mean, it's kind of standard operating procedure. You know, it's like it wasn't really that big of a deal in the sense that it happens all the day. You just don't know it. But there was a guy named Woodard who was ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, and, you know, Bernstein, Woodard and Bernstein. Look it up. And Office of Naval Intelligence is where he came from. And suddenly this young reporter has this deep throat. Well, he had an ONI guy give him the information, Office of Naval Intelligence, because Nixon was planning to blow the lid off the secrecy. And the way they took him down was by impeachment rather than by a bullet. That's actually why Nixon was impeached. Now, he did do the Watergate. He was a crook. But, I mean, I would say most politicians have engaged in such things. I know I'm a bit cynical about it, but, you know, it's not that unusual for dirty tricks and oppo research to be done against someone else. And you have someone go and steal something or rifle through trash to get dirt on someone. And that's what they were doing. And in this case, it was a break-in, so technically it was illegal. And then he covered it up and he got impeached. But the real reason why that became such a big scandal and hit the shit hit the fan was that this ONI guy, Woodard, had a source that he worked who had the actionable intelligence on what really happened. And there goes the president. And of course, you know, we had Ford, who was a part-term, time guy, and he had a CIA director, Bill Colby, who was a member of MAGIC. Bill Colby, I'm giving you like a 50-year history real quick. Is this good? Y'all, you need this, huh? Colby, and by the way, Nixon had a guy named Dick Helms, who did not want me to talk about this at all and said as much to someone who is part of a group, and that woman is in this room today. But what ended up happening with Colby is that as he got older, he was very, very upset. And William Colby, CIA director, who was involved to an extent in the MAGIC operations, decided that it was really terrible what was happening to the country. And he's a very patriotic man. He was up there in years, and he decided to defect as a lone wolf, but an unacknowledged lone wolf. And this is why I'll never allow this again. So let me tell you what really happened to Bill Colby. Bill Colby reached out to me through his best friend, a colonel who I will not name, still living, and an elderly man, but a full bird colonel who had been in MAGIC, this committee, that majority intelligence committee that oversees the UFO issue. And he wanted, Bill Colby wanted to bring forward the technologies, not the things that fly, but an energy technology based on these classified operations and some seed money, about $50 million in, I guess, kind of gray area seed money to my group so we could bring these technologies out and end the oil and global warming and the poverty and all of that. Now, the person who approached me, a member of my board, and this colonel wouldn't say who the client was. They were going to set up a secret meeting. I said, I think it's safer if I know who he is. They said, why? I said, because I can put him into a security system. He says, what do you mean? I said, not knowing is dangerous for him. They said, no, he won't do it that way. So I said, okay. So I'm working full-time as a trauma doctor, emergency doctor, and we're setting that up. And the week before I'm going to meet with this former CIA director, they find him floating down the Potomac River, made to look like an accident, and he was assassinated. And it was tragic. And I said, I will never do this again. I felt terribly guilty. And his best friend came to my best friend's funeral, Sherry Adamack, who had been helping me for years and who was one of three of us who mysteriously got metastatic cancer the same month. Simeon, I think you knew Sherry. And this colonel came to her wake, and he just looked at me. He says, we can't look back. We have to keep putting one foot in front of the other, even though we both have had horrible losses. Yeah. So we did. We kept going. And, you know, when Bill Colby was killed, I thought at that point, well, his game is over. You know, from 94 until now, I was about to give up on everything. But anyway, very, very difficult emotionally and very difficult physically to carry this for, you know, 25 years. But, you know, I figured this is the pearl of great price. You don't throw this one back in to the water. I mean, this is huge. So we decided we would just continue marshaling our energies and go forward. But we knew that we couldn't do anything like that again. It had to be open. I mean, I had to know, and to the extent things could, none of this skullduggery, because the secrecy is their domain. If you go to the National Reconnaissance Office, the super secret spy agency that runs all the satellites, above their entrance it says, we own the night. You can look, Google it. And I always say, we need to own the light. We need to own the light of disclosure and the truth and bring this out. So I try to do things to the extent I can, fully as possible, out in the open, while maintaining the confidences of those who are still living who ask me to do so. But and that's why I'm giving you this much information today. The other thing to remember about how Colby's demise evolved was that he was going to make a run at one of the big central reasons for the secrecy, which I'll get into in a moment. And that's the technology. This is a big science and technology story. Because imagine bringing out a technology that would sit on this podium, that would run your house pulling energy from what's been called a zero-point energy field, that never has to be rebooted for, you know, fuel. It's pulling it out of the fabric of space-time.
Yes.
And it's estimated that every cubic centimeter of space in this room has enough energy to run the United States for a year.
Yeehaw!
If you can tap it. And it has been tapped. So at the root of interstellar transport, aside from the transdimensional and anti-gravity, is the energy source. And the energy source is this amazing electromagnetic flux field. In fact, the early man-made UFOs were called flux liners because it's pulling energy out of this infinite ocean, this infinite sea, as Tesla called it. Professor Dirac called it the Dirac Sea, but it was this infinite field of energy that is at the root of space-time, embedded within space-time. And so bringing out something like that would, of course, immediately make oil, gas, coal, ExxonMobil, cars, internal combustion engines, jet engines, rockets, diesel, ocean liner, everything you can think of that we use would be obsolete and would be retired very quickly. Now, what I just named is several hundred trillion dollars in mineral assets and infrastructure, because we also wouldn't need a public utility. Every car and home would be self-sufficient unto itself. I mean, it is a whole new world. Now, we could have had that world before I was born. We don't have it yet. And as a result, we've decamped in the Middle East with our hegemony, and now we're facing World War III. So there are consequences to this kind of secrecy, unintended, and some are intended. But the unintended consequences are really about blowing back on us hard right now, both physically, geophysically, environmentally, geopolitically, and militarily. It's a very dangerous thing to thwart the development of normal technologies to be used for peaceful purposes. Now, that's the big caveat. Use them for peaceful purposes. Now, eventually, one of the things that happened along the lines of this was, how do we keep all this secret? Well, wet works kill people. Compartmentalization, unacknowledged special access projects, nobody outside the project knows. A big one is ridicule. I have a document from 1950s where they talk about engaging Disney Studios, which had done a lot of the OSS propaganda films in World War II. And Walt Disney was an asset of the CIA. And believe it or not, I mean, everyone thinks of cartoons. But so they were going to, they engaged Disney Studios to make Flying Saucer and Little Green Men films, you know, ha ha ha. And it ridiculed the subject so that respectable people would say, well, you're a kook if you're dealing with UFOs and the ET issue. And that was done deliberately. And this was part of what I referred to in that earlier document, the psychological warfare value of the subject. How do you create the psychological nexus so that the subject becomes subject non grata? Like a person, not persona non grata. It's a subject non grata. It's unwelcome. It has ridicule associated with it. And an Air Force major told me, who's one of our Disclosure Project witnesses, who was present when we shot and killed an ET on the tarmac at McGuire Field there in New Jersey. His testimony is quite riveting, if you've read the materials. And, you know, he was saying, look, really the way this has been kept secret more than anything is just sheer ridicule. Nobody wants to be laughed at. Everyone's concerned what their friends might think. Because, you know, where's the tinfoil hat you're supposed to be wearing? So this ridicule got ramped up in 1953, in the psychological warfare programs. So by the time, you know, we came on the stage, gee, we're 50, 60 years into a hole of ridicule and denial and countermeasures and everything else, that how do you fix this? You know, it's very difficult because most reporters and media people don't want to be ridiculed. Nor do scientific and people and professors and government folks. I mean, there's so many people in the Congress I've met with, very interested, know this is real. I'll say, will you hold a hearing on this? They go, oh, no. It'd be the end of my career. I'd be Labby the laughing stock. I'd be Senator Moonbeam or Congressman, you know, tinfoil head or whatever. So that ridicule, which was ramped up in the 50s, has been very effective, incredibly effective. And that's one of the hard problems I've faced as well. Although, you know, as a medical doctor, luckily I was known as a very good emergency doctor before I got on Larry King Live and started doing stuff like this. But if it had been the other way around, I probably would have never been hired. Really. Yeah, so I was careful in my timing because I did have a family of four children to support. Luckily, they're all out of college now. So now the next thing I want to, if the next document, if you Monroe's tragedy, and it will be time at the end of today for you to ask questions. I'm sure your mind must be swirling by now about a lot of things. And this is the next document is the Peterson Memo, Arlington Institute. So this is the meeting that never happened with me and the CIA director. Very interesting. Look at the date. 3rd of December, 1993. The meeting between me and the sitting CIA director was the 13th of December, 1993. And is that document up? And the CIA director, R. James Woolsey, who, when information about my meeting came out after he had left office, denied it ever happened. Luckily, I could call him in a flat-footed lie. I always tell people in Washington, how do you know these politicians and lawyers are lying? Their lips are moving. Their lips are moving. They're lying. I know it's a very cynical thing to say, but unfortunately very true. But this document, which I'm not going to go all the way through, but some of the information is very, very important. I talked to Woolsey this morning, and he suggested getting together, underline. Project Starlight that's referred to here was the coalition I put together before the Disclosure Project, which no one knew about, where I was trying to get the president, President Clinton, to lead the disclosure on this. And it's a very interesting document because on the second page it says, remember, the most powerful people in the world will have a deep, compelling interest in our activities and will use everything in italics at their disposal to effect their objectives. Very threatening. And then he suggests that I get an encrypted portable phone because my kitchen doesn't have one. I mean, the whole thing is like such. Now, here I am. Of course, you know, I'm like 30-some years old. I'm an emergency doctor, and I'm being asked to come up and brief the sitting CIA director because, and if you read this carefully, it states in there, he's made inquiries and no one's telling him anything. This is a sitting director of the CIA. This is the proof the meeting took place. Now, there is other proof. Now, what the hell is going on that a sitting CIA director doesn't know anything about the most top secret CIA project? Illegal, outrageous, unconstitutional, criminal. And when I found this out, now remember, this is 22 years ago almost, it was a shock to me. Because I was raised like most people, I thought, you know, well, there's a president, there are all these spooks, and there's a chain of command, and it operates. I didn't know about unacknowledged special access projects. I could not have imagined that the man who puts together the presidential daily briefing would be kept secret on stuff that I had collected unbelievable amounts of evidence for the existence of UFOs, extraterrestrial intelligence, et cetera, and so on. But that was the case. And when I met with this man for nearly 3 hours, it became quite clear to me that it was not a prevarication. I really thought that he was saying that just as a way of blowing me off, or, you know, not blowing me off, but sort of saying, eh, you know, I want to meet with you to find out what you know, but I actually do know, and I'm going to pretend like I don't know. No, this man, and my wife can attest to this, was shaken to his foundation. The cover story for the meeting was the dinner party in the D.C. area, which is typical. The wives were invited as cover. Terrible thing to say, but it's true. So my wife was there. I was there. The CIA director and his wife, who's chief operating officer of the National Academy of Sciences, was there. And my host, John Peterson, and his wife. Interestingly, she didn't know who was coming to dinner until that afternoon. He wouldn't tell her. And then she finds out, like, 2 hours before we appear, there's this UFO expert and the CIA director and his wife coming for dinner. Can you imagine being that wife? That was an interesting, I'm sure that night was an interesting conversation after we all left. But that's how these things are done. The real tragedy of it, though, is that if you have a breakdown in government this severe, those of you who are students of governance, where you can have a CIA director or senior members of the military who are being left out of something very important and which hundreds of billions of dollars per year are going into, then you have no government. So the deep national security state from 1950s until today has devolved into this sub rosa, unacknowledged, transnational entity with representation in the UK, Canada, Australia, Brazil, China, Russia, former Soviet Union, which on this issue work together like this. It is not responsive to the body politic.
Yep.
It is not responsive to the heads of government or even the heads of committees and cabinet-level people. There are some cabinet-level people, however, who have known. I mentioned a few. There was a CIA director known as George H.W. Bush, and the CIA headquarters is now named after him. He was a member and is a member of MAGIC.
Yes.
But then there are others, like Woolsey, who wouldn't be told anything. Some presidents have been given a little information, and some have been told nothing. Why? Well, here's how it works. It took me a long time to figure out something very simple. I call this a soul biopsy, because doctors are talking about biopsies, but it's a psychological analysis. So let's say this gentleman is the incoming director of the CIA. The outgoing director of the CIA is me. As incoming director of the CIA, they've taken your life apart, and they know what your values are. If your values are that you would not go along with an illegal, criminal, unconstitutional effort and engage in assassinations that were illegal and other things, they will never tell you about this. And even if you're the president that's incoming, this is what happened to Jimmy Carter. And I know this for a fact. Jimmy Carter got elected, and the outgoing CIA director was, guess who? George H.W. Bush. George H.W. Bush, when he was called in and they had the transition meeting for between November and January, when they have the transition and they're standing up the new cabinet, was asked personally, face-to-face, by Jimmy Carter, and I met with someone who was there, about the UFO issue. And Bush said, I'm not going to tell you, in a very derisive way, about that. Go see if you can get it from the Congressional Research Service. Literally. Brushed him off. And Carter was stunned, because Carter had had a UFO sighting when he was governor of Georgia. I have his report form that he filed officially, signed Jimmy Carter. He ran in 1976 on ending UFO secrecy, actually. So he put together a White House study on UFOs, which we have disclosure project witnesses that attest there too. And they were reaching out to Stanford Research International to do SRI to do the study for them because they couldn't get anything from outgoing CIA Director Bush. And that entity, SRI, had some people come in and threatened them and said, basically, if you want to receive any more contracts from the Department of Defense or the U.S. government, you will refuse to do this study for the White House. We have that as an affidavit signed from someone involved. So, now, very extraordinary, but it's we have legal documents to prove it. So Carter was boxed out of this. And not long ago, he was at a signing ceremony, signing guitars in Spain to raise money for the Carter Center a few years ago. And a very well-known, I think his name's John Williams, well-known classical guitarist who's on our team was there and said, you know, at dinner, someone asked Carter, what was it like to be the most powerful man in the world? And President Carter said, I don't think I was that man. And everyone just thought he was joking. And he said, well, there are certain things I wasn't allowed to know about. And someone very, in a ridiculing way, said, ha, 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 what, like UFOs? And President Carter said, yes, that and more, referring to these energy and technology things. And so Carter wasn't joking. And it is true that he did not get access the whole time he was president because he would have ended the secrecy and they knew it. It's also why he was a one-term president. Now we had after him Ronald Reagan, yeah. Or Ray Gunn, as I call him, R-A-Y. So a colonel who reached out to me was one of the guys putting together the SDI, Strategic Defense Initiative, Star Wars. And he actually met with Carter and Reagan. Carter was a hard sell. Reagan was a soft sell on the billions to go into Star Wars. Now, the way it worked is that the Star Wars was always a cover story for targeting in space interstellar vehicles using these scalar weapons, not lasers. Not if it's at the speed of light, it's not fast enough. Everything important is faster than the speed of light. And so what happened is that he, at that point, got convinced. They sent just the right people in to convince Reagan that there was an existential alien threat. Basically what Wernher von Braun warned on his deathbed about, which we'll get to in a moment. And so Reagan bought into it. That's why you can Google this. At the UN, he said, wouldn't our job of uniting the world be easier if we could unite against a common alien threat? I'm paraphrasing. But you can look. Actually, Bill Clinton recently said that on Jimmy Kimmel, something very similar. The reason that happens is because there is a prevailing need for people who are in certain positions to be given what is I call targeted and tailor-made disinformation. Information that is geared towards scaring the hell out of them so they go along with the agenda of militarism as opposed to peaceful contact with these civilizations. And it's not hard to do if you have a certain orientation, if you have a certain mindset based on fear, xenophobia, us versus them, that whole mindset. So that's really the criteria. Whether someone is pulled in the loop of this secrecy in government or not has to do with what their values are, what their psychological profile is, whether they will go along with the agenda of secrecy. If they will not go along with the agenda of secrecy, they're not going to tell you anything. I don't care if you are the president of the United States or the CIA.
Okay, everybody, it's time to go. I just got absorbed. We did pretty much. We got about an hour and 25 minutes into this almost four-hour presentation. So we'll do some more tomorrow and a little more on Saturday, and we'll get through this. I just... Hi, Marita.
Oh, it's fascinating and... somebody asked if we were going to be doing this again next week. And I said, I didn't know what your plans were, but it sounds like if you're going to be finishing it this weekend, we will not be continuing it next week. So,
well, just remember, everybody, you can go anytime to BBS Radio Station 2, and you can listen to everything for free. It's there for everyone. Mm-hmm. So you can do that anytime, every day or night. I don't know exactly how much we're going to finish. I just know we're going to do some proceeding. There's lots of things going on. So let me say it that way. Okay? Unless you want to just, you know, not have a guest and just roll right through it again next week, that's fine. And we'll do some other things on the rest of the weekend.
Well, it's whatever you want to do. I mean, you know, it's... let me look here to see what I've got scheduled. We could do it next week. The following week would be Omina, but we could do it next week if you want to.
Okay, we'll just reserve this time in this station, and that's what we'll do. That's a deal.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, everybody. All right. Oh, my gosh. And if I could just say...
Okay.
Thank you, yeah. Commander Wander. It doesn't guarantee we'll be done because it's 3 hours and 50-some minutes, but we can do as much as...
Well, you can have some another day when we... Maybe we'll run some of this on Christmas Eve or New Year's Eve when we might not... everybody might not want to be here.
Oh.
And then it would be archived.
Oh, you mean to do it instead of having a big old long Christmas Eve or something?
Right.
We could decide to do something.
Well, we
like
can talk
that.
About that offline.
Yeah. Okay, Commander. We love you. And let's just say
2 a.m. out here.
May the unicorns be with us all, and that's good. And let's just say namaste. We'll see you tomorrow, everyone.
Good night, y'all. We'll see y'all next week.
Music maestro. Namaste, everybody.